attendees to hear you. This system will notify you once you begin your broadcast.
The CFR and E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve? Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Friday, 23rd day of May, 2014. Let's take a quick look at the numbers. The Dow up 55, S&P up 6, NASDAQ up 20, gold down 320, and crude up 56 cents a barrel. Hey, hey, it's Friday, right? Everybody's happy. Well, you know, a lot of people have to work Saturday and have to work Sunday. And I hear people say things like, well, it'll be Tuesday, and they'll say, well, today's my Friday. Huh? Well, Wednesday and Thursday, that's my day off. So, you know, as traders, having sort of a Monday through Friday, 9-to-5 at the worst routine, except for those of us who are forever glued to the charts, 12, 18 hours a day, but the ordinary trader who comes in, sits down for, you know, an hour, 2 hours, makes his daily goal, gets up, goes about his life. Wow. What a life that is compared to, you know, so many who do have to work nights, weekends, holidays. And rather than complain about working on the holiday, they're pumped because they get paid double time or time and a half. So I'm just saying if you're blessed, be grateful, right? And you are blessed in some way. There's somebody somewhere. If there was a big pile of troubles and you threw your troubles into that pile and you looked around and you saw everybody else's troubles, chances are you would be pretty quick to grab your troubles back. Huh, my trouble's not so bad. I can deal with that. You can deal with that. So it is Friday. It is the weekend. We've got a holiday on Monday, Memorial Day. We'll talk a little bit about what that is and why we celebrate it and what it means. Maybe what you would do on this Memorial Day. You can share with us some barbecues, swimming pools open, I think, city pools maybe open this weekend. So just a good time to spend with the family, get some quality family time in, and then be back next Tuesday ready to have at it again. Michael is yesterday you heard he got the new modem with the fast speed, and I said, son, don't be driving so fast. Sure enough, crashed and burned yesterday afternoon. So he was unable to attend the partners meeting last night. We were going to just cancel it. And then the next thing I knew, 2 hours had gone by. And so we had the partners meeting anyway without him. Covered a lot of good stuff. We'll do it again next Thursday. Hopefully Michael will be there. He was able to go to a remote, undisclosed location and trade this morning in the live trading room. And we did okay. We made our daily goal. Wasn't a big day. No, nothing to brag about. But we came and we did the deal. And for us, you know, doing the deal means the same deal. Day after day after day. It's the same trade, it's the same setup, same indicator, same time frame. Nothing ever changes. Except the outcome of the trade. Each trade is independent. We think in probabilities. We're never defined by any one trade, not this trade, the next trade, or the last trade. We're defined by a series of trades. And so when you look at the spreadsheet, that's what you see. You see a series of trades where the same methodology is applied across multiple markets, from the S&P 500 to gold, crude, to soybeans, you name it. We trade it. And if you haven't taken the free trial, by all means, stop by and do that. CFRN.net, upper right-hand corner. There's a little box. If you want more information, go to CFRN.net/apply. We had a big open house today. A ton of people turned out. So glad you made it. If you're here on the radio show for the very first time, you may not be able to see my chart. That means you're not quite fully logged in. You're simply listening to the audio stream. If you'll do this, on the right-hand side of the page, click the big microphone. Follow those instructions. You'll be registered all the way through the end of the month, which I think is next Thursday. And then first of the month, we all register again, and then you're good to go for the entire month. Being registered means that you're not only able to see the charts each day as we make our way through the markets, but you're also able to participate in the discussion. There's a little chat box, share your comments, your thoughts, your ideas, whatever you like, don't like, it's okay. Need to get it off your chest? It's a great place to do it. Now, if whatever you have to say is more than your fingertips can carry, call us. Dial right in, toll free, 866-928-3310, and Bert or Leslie will be more than happy to plug you right into the show live. Okay? If you're wearing a headset, it's even easier. I cannot unmute your mic. If you want to be on radio, this is your opportunity. We always start out with our good word for the day, and We're going to do that today from Matthew. For if you forgive men when they sin against you, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. Matthew 6:14. In the spring of 1981, both Ronald Reagan and Pope John Paul II were shot and seriously wounded in an assassination attempt. Even though each struggled to survive, both the president and the Pope made it a priority to forgive the very people who tried to kill them. Ronald Reagan said, "I realized I couldn't ask for God's help, while at the same time I felt hatred for the mixed-up young man who had just shot me." Isn't that the meaning of the lost sheep? We're all God's children, and therefore equally beloved by Him. I began to pray for his soul and that he would find his way back into the fold. That was our president who said that. Remember when we had a president? Yeah. We also remember those amazing pictures of Pope John Paul II seeking out the man who tried to kill him, and there in his prison cell, sitting face to face with the man, forgiving him. Now, these are not normal responses when someone tries to kill you. Where did these great men learn such actions? They learned it from Jesus. And not only did they learn it from Jesus, but also they were empowered by the Holy Spirit to be able to forgive. This ability and motivation to forgive under circumstances could only come from one source, the one who said, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they do." If Jesus can provide these leaders with the ability to forgive their assassins, don't you think he can give you the power to forgive those who have offended you? And that's our good word for the day. Forgiveness. Forgive somebody today. Somebody that's ticked you off, made you mad, wronged you. You know what they did. But until you forgive them, you're the prisoner, not them. They're because you aren't forgiving them, they're not punished. You're punishing yourself. Set yourself free. Forgive. Doesn't say we have to forget, right? Because then we set ourselves up for the next one. But certainly, forgiveness. All right. Let's look at this chart, which is the S&P 500 E-mini futures. We've got a special guest coming on today. I'm just waiting on an email back from him. Okay. All right, let's go to the chart. And let's pull these down because we don't need them. We can see here our volume today going into the holiday a little lighter than what we've seen earlier in the week. Let's pull that down and pull that down. Because here's what I want you to see. All right. This is where we opened. 18th, 16th, yeah. I don't know what this random line's all about. 1876. That has no bearing on anything this week, does it? 1876, nope. Must have been using it for an example last night. Okay. And so, here's where we open Sunday night on Globex, right between two weekly trading zones. We get this pullback, and there's a little bit of momentum in this hour here, so we overshoot. We put in this nice little reversal candle. We look left. We can see these were the lows of Friday afternoon. We bounce and consolidate for an hour. This red candle here, that's an hour of consolidation. If we broke this out into a 1 minute or 3 minute or 10 minute chart, you'd see all these little candles just, you know, battling back and forth for a full hour. And then in the next hour, we broke and we made the run over the next 1, 2, 3, we call it 4 hours. It took us 4 hours to go from 71 to 82. That's an 11-point move. That's a good move. I get asked all the time, why not just trade zone to zone? Well, you can. Certainly no reason not to. You have to have the patience to do that. From here to here, how many hours is that? When you enter, your entry is important. Once you're in, your risk, if you're looking for an 11-point gain, can you do that with a 2-point risk? You can, but you may need to enter the trade more than once. Are you prepared to do that? Or are you simply willing to use a bigger stop? So you have to work that out. What we're doing each day in the live trading room is we simply go in, capture 2 points, we're done. Gone. Out of there. Except we keep trading because we're committed to trading for 2 hours for everyone who is a part of the live trading room, for the partners, for those who are there on a free trial, etc. And today was one of those days where we hit our daily goal, and then because we kept trading, right? And that's no fun. Pushing money back and forth across the table. Yeah, once you push it to my side, well, let's keep it over here. That's better. All right. So, you've got to get the mindset that you're going to take these bigger trades. If you want to work and take 11 points out of the market on Monday and then, you know, take Tuesday through Friday off, you have to have the mindset that allows you to do that. Now, we're looking at a historic chart. Any man can look brilliant with a historic chart. But is it not a fact that price moved from 70.71 to 82.83? It is. Now we get some rejection. Price is trying. Remember, these are hourly candles. Price is working hard. It is trying, man, to break through there. We don't see any candles close above the zone, above 83. And it's really this candle here where we take out this low. Okay? That's when we get our heads up that price is going to attempt to move to the zone below. But look what happens in the following hour. Now, let's say you had entered here at 1878, get down to a low of 74. That's a 4-point move. You're feeling really good about life and yourself. And then you get this reversal right back to. In fact, you're actually in a drawdown at this point, if you got in at 78. What are you thinking? Oh, man, I better get out. And then the market, what does it do? Reverses, goes right to the zone. Here's where, if you're going to pursue this, here's what you need to think about. Once you start to see rejection in this area, if you can get your entry here, okay, in this zone. Now, what's the swing high on this candle? It's 84.50. So let's say you sold 83. You would have a point and a half drawdown, but it would lead into an 11-point trade. If you entered up here, this action here, this pullback, wouldn't be so hard stopping, would it? You have to think about how you're going to trail your stop. Are you going to just shed contracts as it drops? Are you going to trail it? If you trail it, you may get stopped out. Will you get back in? I'm pointing this out because these trades are available to the partners every single week, okay? But it takes a very special skill set to get in it and stay in it. Price breaks back up above 71 here. This little move where we come up, see that little bit of space there? Red candle, we find support, and then away we go. 71 to 82. So we had 11 up, 11 down, and 11 back up. That's nice trading, right? As we progress through the week, we get above 82, 83. We make that move. Classic move. The initial break above the zone. Price pulls back, finds support at the zone, and then price runs. Okay? Now, last night we were in the workshop, and I had put out an alert yesterday, consider being long from 1892 to 1897, which was the weekly trading zone. Now, look at how much time it took for that to happen. We got triggered in 1892, triggered in. We'd have to go back and look at whatever time I put the alert out. Now, we're looking for a 7-point gain. So either if you're going to use a 2-point stop, you may have to re-enter the trade, or you use a larger stop that's justified by where you think the market's going. Where we thought it was going was to the next zone overhead. And although it took forever, it seemed, we finally hit the zone overhead, 1897, to the tick. It being a Friday afternoon before a holiday weekend, I got my doubts about it making it up to the final weekly trading zone. And that's not part of the game plan that we go all the way to the highest or lowest zone every week. It's just that we don't ever expect to close above the highest or below the lowest. And so we could get quiet here at this 97.98, and if the week were to close right inside of this 97.98, that would not be surprising. This little box I have drawn here, that's where I thought we might hit it last night. Just kind of projecting. I was off by a few hours, as you can see. On the NQ, we had an alert 2 days ago, long 36.50, before that long 36.10, and again price has gone from zone to the zone. Did it go in a straight line? Nope. A lot of sideways, small candle action, but It finally arrived. Now, from 3650 to 3665, that's not a big move. From 25 to 65, that's 40 points. The NQ does pay $20 per point. It's $5 a tick, 4 ticks per point. So from 25 to 65, it's 40 points times 20, $800 per contract. If you're a 10-contract trader, that's a nice check. Okay? But again, you have to hold through this and oh so close and then all of this. You really have to have confidence that it's going to actually make it to the zone. Alex, I didn't know you had asked me to show the NQ weekly zones, but there you are. $18.75 has been a key level for some time. Maybe it was supposed to be that. Oh, I don't know, Mike. Oh, you're talking about on the ES when I had... No, I think I had just drawn a line to make some point last night. Is that what you're talking about? Okay. Let's see what Tom has to say. I'm going to share this, Tom. You shared it with me because of, and I'm guessing you want me to share it with the audience. I am anti-war. I know of no war worth the cost in human suffering and lives. Yet I acknowledge and respect the sacrifices and selflessness of those who were misled and conditioned to kill and to die in America's wars for wealth and hegemony. I see no contradiction in that. Consequently, I will not avail myself of the many Memorial Day sales at the mall, as I will not support the exploitation and commercialization of the memory of the fallen to enhance consumerism and profit. Nor will I have or attend a barbecue or party, as anyone who believes that celebration is appropriate on this weekend misunderstands and or misrepresents the meaning of Memorial Day. Nor will I attend or march in a parade, as parades accomplish nothing save to allow those who make or ignore war to feign support and appreciation for their victims and to relieve their collective guilt for crimes against humanity. Marching in a parade honors no one, nor does it educate or inform about the realities of war. Rather, it perpetuates the mythology. Well, Tom, you're certainly entitled to your opinion. I know many people who have lost loved ones in combat, and they love nothing more than to march in parades and to have a celebration and to remember that someone in their family had the courage to put their life on the line and shed their blood, that we might have freedom. We are a free people. There's a woman in a few days, she's going to be hanged by the neck until dead because she professes to be a Christian. We live in a much different world here in America. We have freedoms that were bought at a great price. And if a parade offends your sense of dignity for those who willingly gave their lives, then that brings me sorrow. but you'll celebrate the day in a way that's meaningful to you and as others will in ways that are meaningful to them. But thank you for sharing that with us. Alex says, how many alerts do you send out after regular trading hours during the month? You know, Alex, if you go out and look at the Google Plus page, you'll see how many I send out. I used to send out a ton every night, and then I hate to say I got lazy. That just sounds horrible. Quite frankly. But I'll put the link in the chat room for you so that if you want, you can follow us. There you go, guys. I just put that in the chat box for everybody. I'll put it in the box that turns it into a link. Okay, now, once you go there, you got to request a follow, and then I got to approve you, but you should bookmark the page somehow, whatever browser you use. Bookmark it so that you can find it next time, okay? And to answer your question, was it Alex? Yeah, Alex. If you scroll down, you just keep scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and you'll see that some nights I'm incredibly busy and other nights not so much. I used to send everything out on Twitter. If you go to Twitter, yeah, that's pretty cool. You can also, there's 6,783 tweets out there. Not every one a market call, but plenty of them that you can sift through and see what you think. Okay, back to where I was, the NQ. All right, the NQ just hit its zone. Now, is that the highest zone for the week? I don't think so. NQ, NQ. No, it is. Okay, that is the highest zone this week for the NQ. So, we do not expect the market to close above 3670. I didn't do anything last night on soybeans because I was busy with the partners meeting. The Dow, we had a 180-point rally off the last alert, which was to be long above 16,380. But for the week, we've done a very nice job of, here's the open Sunday night. We come down to the zone. Once we hit a zone, the market has to decide what it's going to do. Is it going to go to the zone overhead or the zone below? Well, in this hour, came right to the zone, put in a little reversal candle, and over the next 2 hours, made the trip back up. Spent an hour consolidating, and then moved from zone. You know, it came so close to the zone there. It got 497, so we missed it by 3 points. Rolled sideways. We actually touched it. It was as if it just had to touch it. We came down, hit this zone, bounced back up to this zone, back down to this zone, and finally down to the 16,325/330. Where do we go? Up to the zone, and then the next zone, and then the next zone. As we hit these zones, see how it backs off and it's consolidating and it's thinking and it's trying so hard to make up its mind. And then it finally cut loose, ran it, and that ended the 180-point rally from the alert we sent out. And then price went from the zone, back to the zone, back to the zone. And we still have a zone left overhead on the Dow. So while we don't see the NASDAQ going any higher, it's possible with the Dow, the Russell... The Russell right now is trying to get to 1129/1130. Now, that is the highest weekly zone on the Russell. So we'll keep an eye on that during the show. Alex, in our mentoring program, what we teach you is how to trade. It's not a trade calling service. The fact that I send out these alerts or trade ideas, as I call them, it's because I want those who are partners, those who are in our community, I want them to go and look at their chart and see what I see so that we can discuss it the next day. They can email me. It's not just something to trade. The idea behind becoming a partner is that you yourself actually learn how to trade. That's what we want. We want you to become a trader. We don't want you to ever be dependent again upon any man to tell you when to get in, when to get out. We want you to be able to sit down, look at a chart, assess whether or not there is a trade available. If there is, you take advantage of it. If there's not, you learn patience and discipline, and you wait until the opportunity exists. Now, we do record each day's live trading room. We have about 500 hours on tape right now. Well, we don't really use tape, but you get my drift. So if you wanted to become a partner and you wanted to learn our methodology, then how it would work for you is whenever your trading day starts or your work day ends, you would go watch a 2-hour trading session. Doesn't matter which day you pull out of the library because they're all the same. Doesn't matter if we have a good day or a bad day because we're going to execute the strategy the same each and every day on each and every trade. That's what makes it not easy, but simple to learn the methodology because we don't trade it up. We don't switch it up every time we go to bat. Same thing, time after time after time. What that does is that puts probability in our favor. We stack the deck in our favor. And so if you have an interest, the problem is with you being able to take the free trial. But send an email to support@cfrn.net. There may come a day when we actually offer a class at night for those who are in different parts of the world, those who do have day jobs. Maybe you have a week, maybe you have some vacation time coming. That's when you might spend your week because you need to be in the free trial for a week because we let you download the platform. We let you use the indicators. We teach you how to use them. We give you the whole shebang so that you can figure out if this is right for you because we don't want any unhappy campers. So you get to, you know, you get to, how does that say? We don't sell you a pig and a poke. You get to poke the pig first. Yeah, like that. You see what I'm saying? So send us an email and we can talk about it. support@cfrn.net. Okay. We got a special guest coming on today. Let me tell you all about it. Let me find my note here. He'll be on later in the show. We're going to go talk to David right now at Page Trader. Ed Corey has 16 years of experience in the petroleum industry. Now, most of us have experience trading our own account, our own money. Ed was in a very unique position. He traded big money for some big companies. He held the position of refinery operations manager and director of futures and product trading at a refining company in Texas. He worked for PetroSource. He was vice president of products and futures there. During this time, he directed the hedging and trading of several hundred million barrels in the futures and cash markets. Additionally, he consulted with various corporations in the design, justification, and implementation of hedging programs. Ed's currently the CEO of Corey Investments. He's a trading and investment consulting company started back in 92, located in Houston. Clients include hedge funds, foundations, corporations. For 20 years, he's been designing, backtesting, optimizing, and trading proprietary systems. Ed's going to become a regular guest on the show. We'll probably have him on once a week just to talk in particular about the energy markets. It'll give us a unique perspective because we all see it from the retail trader side of the desk. But there's a whole lot going on the other side of the desk that you and I know absolutely nothing about. I believe that knowledge can help us tremendously. When we start looking at the commitment of trader reports and those types of things, what are the big guys, the commercials they call them, what are they doing? And how might I trade so that I'm with them and not against them? Because they do move the markets. So that is coming up later today in the show. We'll talk about energy market fundamentals, hedging, technical analysis. So if you trade crude, even if you trade the slingshot in the live trading room 2 hours a day or just until you get your daily goal, this is information I think you'll find very beneficial. So for now, we're going to pause for a brief station identification. We'll be right back with David Williams from PageTrader.com.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Morning, Dwayne.
David, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here. And I don't know if Michael Bork's here today, but good morning
he
to him
not.
As well.
He was that new modem he got, that fast modem. I told him not to drive it so fast, and well, he crashed and burned it yesterday afternoon, and so Comcast or whoever's out at his house right now replacing it. It went dead right before the partners meeting last night. Just gone.
Yeah.
Just
technical.
It wouldn't light up. The lights wouldn't blink or anything. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, that stuff happens.
Yep, it does.
The world
and it sure is aggravating.
Yeah, it sure is. Well, what a world.
Yeah, it is a world. What's happening in your world today? Anything?
Well, we're actually technically closed, but I came in because we have positions on, of course, and we're very happy to see what effectively is an inversion or a kind of a flip around of what the market would normally do, which would send, we're talking about the S&P now, which would send it to sharply higher prices, which we've forecast. And we're waiting to see those prices get reached, and we're trading it, and we're you know, going to talk about it, of course, into next week and so on. So, and we'll talk about it today as we when we get to the markets.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, you know, normally, seasonally speaking, sort of the seasonality of a holiday like this, the Memorial Day holiday, the market is seasonally bullish coming into that. They started out the week with a very sharp decline, which we had forecast, but the market normally would have gone to lower prices, which was interesting. It was, that's counter to the seasonality, but that also was the normal position for the market. And because they were able to get above 1885, that indicated that the market had much further to go, and that got us to forecast the advance yesterday to from 85 up to 93 to 95. They completed that yesterday. And we also believe that higher prices are coming, which we've given out into next week. So in general, like we talked about on your program yesterday, generally speaking, the market is going to express energy to the upside into next week, and that includes making, like we talked about yesterday, all-time new highs. So that's what we're looking for, and we're very close to them right now. We're a dollar away. So, you know, today's high is 1897.75. The old high is 1898.50. So we're very close to all-time new highs here. So we talked about this idea of the this period of time being for a breakout. And the only reason that we believe it, for the way that we view the market, the fact that the market could not decline during or into the week of May 26, which is next week, in a very important time period, would force it to all-time new highs. And that's why we believe that is going to be the case. The question is do they reach the levels that they normally would, which we believe they will, which we've put out in our reports and so on, and how do they handle those levels? How do they handle this whole business of breaking to new highs? And that's going to that'll take us to our next action. But I do think that next week, I mean, talking about the S&P, we're right on it right now because we're so close to the highs. We do think that next week, the week of May 26, is a very, very important week for the S&P in terms of completing this move. And could it run a little bit over into the next week? It could. I think you should take, I think traders should be very cautious with the market on the long side beyond next week, unless something of greater importance happens and, you know, they exceed certain targets and so on. So we're excited. I mean, this is a really fantastic thing. The market, if you didn't know about the technical side of the market, you would probably have a pretty good indication that the market tends to rally on any kind of scandal, any bad news, what we've been talking about for years. This market just loves bad news, and we have plenty of it.
We do. We have more than enough.
We have more than enough. So, we're, you know, I don't know. I just want to mention again, I doubt that anybody's going to get fired over this scandal with the hospitals and our, you know, war heroes waiting around. This is a problem that predates this administration. But this administration promised early on that this would be fixed. We're 5.5 years into it, and it's worse. I mean, isn't that just classic government at work? You know, we promise we're going to do this, and then it actually gets worse. And I don't know why they waited 26 days to come out and even comment on it, but they did. you know, it's just a strange, it's a strange world we live in here. The government is a very, this is a very peculiar form of governance over people. It's kind of like a nonchalant, non-engaged government. And I wouldn't want to be in some kind of trouble and have to rely on this government to come scoop me up. I mean, I think we actually have, don't we have a Marine or something like that, armed forces, sitting in a jail in Mexico for no good reason? I mean, isn't somebody on the phone taking care of that? The guy's been there for 2 months. You know, it seems like the armed forces get the short shaft. You know, if they have to go to a hospital, well, that's no good. That isn't working so well. If they get put into a Mexican jail, we can't get them out. We can't make a phone call and say, you know what, that guy comes out just about now. That's when he gets out. Otherwise, we stop sending this and that, and we, you know, whatever. You're not taking our armed forces people and jailing them on, you know, trumped up nonsense.
Well, trust me, many a sailor has been locked up in a jail in Tijuana. That's kind of just standard operating procedure.
Yeah, I believe that.
Down that
the only difference is that this sailor has made national news, and our government well knows about this sailor, and nobody's done anything. He's been there for 2 months. So.
And what are the charges against him?
Well, he had some weapons in his car. He's a well respected, you know, I'm not sure exactly which field he's in, whether he's, I think he may be in Marines. And he made a wrong turn. And many people make this same wrong turn because of some new way they have the roads laid out there. And he just wanted to turn around and get out of there, and they arrested him there. And
have you ever been to Tijuana?
No, I've never been to Tijuana.
Oh, my goodness. David, you should go.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Don't stop at the petting zoo. Just walk right by that. But because it's such a carnival, incredible cacophony and carnival of people. It's, I mean, you know, the young men, the sailors, they go there to drink and carouse and whatnot. But as an older man of a certain age, you would just, the colors and the vibrancy and the street people and all the schemes and scams of the street people. You got the guy on this corner that sells you the bag of weed, and you got the cop on this corner who arrests you and takes your bag of weed and gives it back to the guy on the other corner so that he can sell it to the next guy that comes by. That one bag of weed just keeps circulating, you know, all day long. It's they've had a good trade there on that corner for a lot of years. I mean, it's just insanity. Now, I got to say, it's been...
Oh, I can't wait.
It has been, the last time I was there was probably 78, 79. Maybe it's completely changed. Maybe it's totally
civilized. Well, that's a lot of eras ago.
That is.
That's a lot of eras ago.
It is. My guess is it's only gotten wilder. But maybe not. Maybe they've settled down. Could be. Mm-hmm. It's possible.
Well, that's not high on my list of things to do, but I appreciate the offer.
No. If you're ever in Southern California, down in San Diego, just pop across the border, you know, park your car on this side, just walk across the little footbridge, grab you a taxi, $10, $5, whatever, and just have them take you into the center of town and just absorb all of the merchants and the commerce and the street vendors and the people, and keep your wallet in your front pocket or put it in your sock, or, you know, you've got to be careful. But it's an adventure. I mean, it is. If you've never been there and you've never seen that kind of thing, I've seen that kind of thing all over the world as a sailor, traveling, getting in trouble in a few places. But, the U.S. government typically is pretty good about getting a sailor or a soldier out of a jam unless it's heinous or somehow becomes high profile, or you just, you know, tick off the wrong official. In most countries, we work pretty well together on those things. Now, there's a Goldman Sachs analyst. He's an energy sector specialist, former U.S. Army captain. He has made it his mission to combat the military veteran suicide epidemic ever since he left the service. An estimated 18 to 22 veterans take their own lives every day. That's one veteran suicide every 65 minutes. Now, I'm reading this for the first time. This is an article in Business Insider today. Did you have any idea that was going on?
I did have an idea about the suicide rate, and it is shocking. You know, war is not good for people.
8,000 a year is the average.
Yeah, that's not a good number. And I, like I say, war is not good for people. Mankind sucks and wants to grab and take whatever's not there, and that includes people who claim to be religious as well. When put into position where they can grab, they grab. Human nature is a very powerful and compelling piece of work. It really is. Now, I'm not accusing anybody, and I'm just saying this has been the history of man. No matter what guise they're under, no matter what they think of themselves, when something is left open for them or they believe there's an opportunity, they go grab it. That works well for us in technology. It works well for us in terms of breaking into new ground, but it's a horrible, horrible stain on the history of humanity, and it's not good for people to be in war. It's not good for people to see their world shattered with the visual and auditory images of people being blown apart and strange people that have strange religious beliefs that are coming after you like zombies because some silly interpretation of something that they have.
You don't stop making fun of my snakes.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's not good for people. And they come back, and those images and those bad feelings and those disconnects from life probably are tremendously haunting to them. And they want to find their way back out of that into a normal feeling, but perhaps they just, it's a house of mirrors. They can't find their way out. And it's tragic that how many people are killing themselves over that. We know it's unnecessary. It's not necessary for them to kill themselves, but in their mind, it is necessary. They don't see any way out, you know? So, you know, the solution is don't go to war. But obviously, you know, if we put our defenses down, we would be taken over by people in a heartbeat. America would. So we have to defend ourselves, and we have to, you know, continuously do that. Some of the wars that we go to are probably not necessary. I think there's probably some disagreement on that, but some of the things that we get involved in are not necessary, and some things we should have been involved in that maybe we're not. But, yeah, it's unfortunate, Dane. You know, it's a shocking number that 8,000 people just related to the military each year end up ending their lives because of the torment that is in their brain from having been through that experience. You know, too many times.
Yeah. So do you know what? I agree. Tom, apparently this, is it the war that's got you upset today, buddy? Or is it something else? I can tell you're really roused. I know you're upset that the market's moving higher on low volume. Okay. As well, and now you talk about traditional laws of supply and demand. We can talk about that in crude or in soybeans, but we can't talk about traditional laws of supply and demand in the S&P because there is no traditional law of supply and demand. There's an unlimited supply of E-mini contracts. Never run out. So who or what is propelling this? You know? That's good. That is a good question. Who or what is propelling this? I'll put that to you, David. Who or what is propelling this?
Well, a couple things. First of all, the S&P has an unlimited supply of contracts, but that doesn't mean that there's an unlimited number of buyers or sellers. The buyers and sellers fluctuate, obviously, and supply and demand indeed is at work there. When there's more buyers, the S&P, which there's unlimited contracts, goes up. When there are more sellers, obviously it goes down. So I would say that although there's unlimited contracts, supply and demand certainly plays a part, a big part. And the typical supply and demand that we talk about, being more buyers than sellers, makes the market go higher.
I agree that demand plays a part, but the supply side is unlimited. So,
well, there's an unlimited number of contracts available for overall purchase, but the market goes down because there's more sellers than there are buyers. People are selling faster than they're buying.
And no, people just stop buying.
People can also stop buying. But are you saying that's the only reason the market goes down? That they pay?
Oh, no. Sellers can come in and drive a market down, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that.
But it takes financial commitment for a market to rise, but for a market to fall, all that has to happen is everybody stops buying, and it'll just drop. But you can also have the bears come in, and like the spot we're at right now, 1897, at a weekly trading zone. Are the sellers going to come in and drive it down, or are people going to take profits, stop buying, and as a result, price falls? I don't know.
Yeah.
However, no matter how high price goes, there'll always be more contracts for sale, more contracts for sale. All I'm saying is that people should always factor that into their trading equation. When you're thinking about markets, and you're the one who talks about, you know, I'm the guy who says a chart is a chart is a chart, and you say, no, all markets are different. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you that they are different. But with crude oil, you can have an explosion, a refinery fire, workers go on strike. With soybeans, you can have a drought or a flood or frost or, you know, the orange juice, all that. All of those things have a natural supply and demand function. I'm just saying the S&P is different because you can never run out. You don't ever get a bad crop. You don't ever get a thin crop. Oh, man, when they came out with the June S&Ps, they only printed 100 million.
Yeah. So, you have to remember also, though, that the individual stocks that make up the S&P do have, in many cases, limited numbers of shares, and those are the stocks that make up the S&P 500. Its overall movement is based upon stocks whose shares are limited.
But we're trading futures here, not stocks.
That's true, but the futures move up and down. It's an index. It moves up and down because of those stocks' movement. It's precisely relatable to those stocks. So I'm not sure. Here's what I'm saying. I get what you're saying about the unlimited shares. I'm not sure the unlimited quantity of S&P contracts has a lot of meaning with regard to traditional supply and demand. The index is really made up of a bunch of stocks, 500 stocks, that do indeed have limited numbers of shares available. And so therefore, the index, although the index per se has unlimited, the very thing that makes the index move up and down, you know, ostensibly the stocks that make it up are limited and do have supply and demand issues inside of them. Now, some stocks, of course, may have larger numbers, or maybe they even may have some unbelievably infinite sounding number, but they're limited to some degree. So I'm just saying that I'm not so sure how important the unlimited nature of the futures contract is. I think the movement is based upon the individual stocks, which indeed are limited in some way. So overall, the S&P acts like any other market with regard to supply and demand. It does move up and down when there's more buyers, you know, or however you want to lay it out. There's no buyers, so the market moves down, or there's heavy selling and the market moves down, and the opposite. But generally speaking, if people don't like what's happening in the news regarding a particular stock, they run for the hills and the S&P goes down, if that's happening in enough individual stocks. So it is unlimited in terms of the supply of those contracts, but that just is servicing the ability for you to trade the real thing that's moving it, which is the stocks. In fact, the index came about, the whole reason for the index, the futures index, not the cash, but the whole reason for the futures, is because in order for you to trade all of the stocks, you'd have to buy every single one of them. Well, they made the index and they gave you a futures contract that represents all of those stocks so that people could place, you know, a quote-unquote bet, you know, on the whole index. You can't do that with the cash index. You know, the cash index, you can't buy it or sell it. You have to go in and buy the individual stocks. And if you wanted to, if you thought the cash index was going to go higher, you would be in that position, the position of saying, well, if I think the whole index is going higher, I have to go in and buy every stock. That's pretty expensive to do. So the futures contract just allows people, it facilitates people to get into the index, which itself is made up of stocks that do have limitations on shares and so on. So that's what I'm saying. I'm not sure how really important the unlimited nature of the futures contract is, you know, be that as it may, you know, the thing does move up and down. It does move that way. And the other question was, you know, why is it going up on limited volume? Or is that, was that what his question was, or on very light volume?
Oh, let's see how light today's volume is.
Well, I'm saying, was that his question?
That was one of his points.
You know, loaded into that question is that markets shouldn't go up on light volume, and I would like to disabuse you of that concept. I've never seen that to work. I've seen it in books. I don't understand why that still is around. Markets go up on light volume all the time. Markets go down big on light volume a lot. And they also do it on big volume on the upside and big volume on the downside. I've heard people for decades, because I've been doing this for a long time, say, it's a breakout, but it's on light volume. You know, honestly, I've not really seen that to be a useful correlation to as to whether or not the breakout's really good. And I've seen a lot of markets go higher, as we all have, on light volume. I think what the meaning of that is, obviously, is that there's not a lot of participation, so it won't go very far. That's what I think the general idea of it is. But I think people use that phrase. Somebody just texted me. People use that phrase because they're on the wrong side of the market. In other words, they're looking for a reason for the market to stop going up and so on. The bottom line is I'd be careful with the volume thing, saying that, it, you know, if it's big volume, we're going to the moon. If it's small volume, it'll stop and fail, just as a cautionary thing, because I don't think it has as much value if you're thinking in terms of technical analysis. I don't think it really has as much value as you might.
When I started trading the S&P, it traded 2 to 3 million contracts a day. Now it's more 1 to 2 million contracts a day, and it has been for a couple of years. But here's a day with 2.5 million. Here's a day with 2.5. Here's a day with 2.5. 2 million. 2 million. Now today, leading into a holiday weekend, the fact that we only have 500,000, and we haven't moved up much today. I mean, last night during the partners' workshop, we were sitting at 1890, 1892. We've only moved up 5 points, basically.
Well, we're up six right now. Yeah, we're up 6 points right now off the close of yesterday, right? So
now, the whole week, do we have a little decline here? Yeah, we do. If we go back to, let's see, today, that's 500. Yesterday, we had 1 million. And the day previous, 1.3. Tuesday, 1.5. Monday, 1 million. So we're still trading 1 million to 2 million on average. And that's just kind of what the S&P has come to be. It's 1 to 2 million contracts a day. And occasionally, we'll do 2.5 million. I don't know if we've seen a 3 million contract day in a while, but this one came pretty close. 2.5, about the highest I see. So I think that whole, you know, when markets climb on high volume or low volume, again, I think that is important when you're dealing with individual stocks, because there is, in theory, a limited supply. However, I don't think it applies in the indices, because I've seen it at night and over holidays. There's going to be trading Sunday night, Globex. People are on vacation. People are not going to be in the office on Monday. But there will be traders trading Sunday night. And I've seen the market move 10 points in the S&P on extremely light volume. If somebody comes in and starts bidding up the market, if there's nobody in the way, if there's nothing to stop them, then that thing can move. And it can fall as easily, even easier, perhaps. So, yeah, I think that stocks moving higher on light volume is worrisome with individual stocks, but with the indices, I don't pay it too much attention.
Yeah, I haven't found it to be a useful bit of information either way, but everybody has to see, you know, other people may see something in that I don't see, because we all tend to emphasize different things when we see the chart. You really have to know by now that everybody sees a different chart. They may have the same indicators, but everyone sees a different chart, because everyone's seeing actually the same chart basically, but they're emphasizing different aspects of the chart well over what you may be emphasizing. You may be emphasizing some other point and therefore miss what they happen to be seeing. It's like having five people looking up and, you know, five men are looking to try to see the bird in a tree. A lot of people see leaves, a lot of people see branches, you know, but they may not see the bird. But one man looks up and he, oh, yeah, there's the bird right there. It's the easiest thing. It just so happens that he naturally emphasized certain physical things and he saw the bird. So the charts are like that. We all say, you know, everybody is looking at the same stuff, but people are emphasizing internally, visually processing different parts of that chart very, very differently than others. And so in a way, you could say that everyone sees a different chart, and everyone, therefore, trades differently. And that's why arguments about people using the same methodology and it stops at working are virtually meaningless. Not only are everybody seeing the same chart, even with the same tool on it, but everyone is also going to trade. You know, some of them are going to get in earlier or later. Some of them are going to not trade this turn. I mean, it almost becomes its own market. And I don't believe markets are dictated to by people with trading systems. I think there's much, much, much more powerful forces than that. Then, you know, we hear this about, you've all heard about, you know, Elliott Wave. Well, it used to work really good, and then it got too popular, and now it doesn't work anymore, and, you know, that kind of thing. I think your methodology either addresses a very important principle, which it can be used to trade, and it's during some periods it may not be as good, and you have to sort of make up that difference by either not trading it or using some other tool you have, or it doesn't. You know, your methodology is either in concert with the principles of the market or they're not. There you are. I would be careful with that volume thing, though, because I think of all the things that I hear, you know, that I've heard my whole trading career, that's one of the useless ones that I've just never been able to make a connection with. And you'll hear it until the day you die. Doesn't matter what your age is. If you're 5, you know, you'll hear it when you're 95. People will still be saying that. It broke out on high volume, or it broke out on light volume, so I'm not buying it. It just seems to make sense to people, even though it doesn't really make much of a difference statistically over time. So, I mean, today, not that I'm forecasting it, but today we could have, you know, a 10 or 12 point move up. It's a pretty good deal to move up 10 or 12 points. I've seen it you know, how many thousands of times in my whole time of doing this. So just be careful with that. I think there's better things to look at. If volume is certainly one of the dimensions of the market, and there are, I think there's valuable ways to use volume, but just because there's a large crowd of people doesn't mean they're all buying. There could be a breakout on high volume, and most of them could be selling. So really, the breakout is on small volume, on the buy side. See, it's not just, you know, it's too crude, it's too blunt of an instrument to say it's a breakout on high volume, because that doesn't even address that a lot of the volume could be sellers, not buyers. So just be careful with that.
You can sell a position to enter the market or exit the market. Sometimes people forget that.
Right. So long people that are getting out and so on. All that. There's better ways. There's more important things to do there. And the other thing I would like to say also, if I think his name was Tom, if you're sitting with short positions and want the market to go down, if that's what your position is, you know, I would caution you to be careful here. Just as I would almost in any instance, but in particularly in this case, because the S&P has done something, a pretty good flip around. I think you have a shot of seeing potentially some lower prices here, midday here, as we get into a little further into the day, you know, selling off here. But the bigger picture could really take us to all-time new highs, and I wouldn't want you to have to unnecessarily suffer that if you, you know, are waiting for a larger move. Right now, the indication is that, you know, higher prices is for us is probably likely. So use a stop, find a place, you know, whatever it takes. And if you're already, if a person, I'm not going to address Tom directly, but if a person is stuck in a position and you're too deep in it to say, well, no, I'm too deep in it, I really can't take it off right now, just timestamp that and remember that is self-destructive behavior in the market. That's what that is. If you found yourself too deep and you can't get out, you can't act anymore because it's too far against you, you had to get to that point, you had to go through self-destructive behavior. And self-destructive behavior is not going to work, you know, obviously well in the markets. It's a very bad place to play that out. I've been there. Nobody's speaking down to anybody. I've done it. If I could have a check for every time I did it, I would take the rest of the day off. you know, we've all thrown money away doing that. But that behavior has to stop where you get into positions. I'm not addressing this directly to Tom, but just anybody. If you get into positions and you find yourself commonly saying statements like, no, I can't get out now. I got to wait for a pullback. This is too much. I can't take this off. You got there through self-destructive behavior in the markets, and you got to stop that. Why learn any methodology if you're just going to allow you're going to be wrong at some point, and it's going to go do that. What's the use of learning a methodology? You know, you're taking all your time and effort and turning it into nothing by just letting something run against you. And there's no need to do that. And there's not only is there no need to do it, it's a wonderfully good feeling to manage your account properly. And that includes taking winners and managing the downside. I'd also suggest that you all, everyone, thinks more about trade selection than you may be doing, because trade selection has a great deal to do with your overall happiness in the markets. You know, your ability to say, yeah, I'm excited, I'm enthusiastic about coming in and doing this, because your trade selection allows you to be, for the most part, correct. And even if you are wrong, it's for very small amounts. Trade selection plays a big, big part in what we do. And it's not a subject that's talked about a lot, but it's a very important tool for you to know what it is you need to see to make this work for you and for your particular investment to work out in the market.
One last thing to think about, Tom, your comment, and everybody's entitled to their opinion. Tom says, do you really think these pivot point lows and highs are created by millions of retail traders that all of a sudden decide in unison to buy or sell. Well, Tom, as you know, last week, the high of the week was our highest weekly trading zone. Okay? This week, we turn, the market turns at these zones. Now, trust me, I'm not plugged into the big boy network, nor am I what would be called a big player. So if you're saying that big money controls the market and causes these turns, if that's true, how is it that I know about them and publish them week after week after week, not just in the S&P, but in the NQ and in the Russell and whatever other different markets we do, the Dow? How's that possible? Because I'm not a part of the big money, big boy network. Only big money creates or turns markets. So,
is that what he's saying?
I'll leave that. Yeah, I'll leave that hanging. If you wanna tackle that, feel free.
Well, I don't know. You know, it's an argument that can't have an ending to it. Really, it's like somebody saying, the markets are, moved by, like you're saying, Tom's saying, the markets are moved by the big money or the big interests that are all coinciding to make the market turn and so on. We've had these discussions many, many times. It's really not a discussion that ever has a real ending. People are going to believe, what they're going to believe about the markets, but people do jump to conclusions. I would be careful for anybody coming to the conclusion about what creates pivots in the market, that the market all in unison, as he says, turns at a certain point. The market turns at certain points because there's forces other than big money and traders actually at work in the markets. So it depends on what level you're speaking from. You can speak from the level of the traders and the millions of dollars and billions of dollars that go in the market, but there's bigger levels than the traders. Those bigger levels are at work as well. So, that's another discussion, but that's, the market has a technical nature to it. And if you understand some of the technical nature, you can predict too much of what the market's going to do for the big money to magically follow your prediction. That means that there's other things at work other than simply the simple answer, which is, big money creates the pivots and so on. The practical value of knowing this is that there is a technical nature to the market that you can track and follow and do work with. And our whole business, over here at PageTrader, is specifically, we're in the business of forecasting what the market is about to do and then trade that future movement. We have a record of thousands of forecasts that are published, and we've made on radio and so on. And when the market goes and does those things, when you say everything goes in concert, well, the big money would have to be agreeing with our forecast in order for them to be right, and we're not in contact with the big money. So something else is at work other than simply the answer of the big money. So I just would tell you to, or ask you to consider that, because otherwise the correct forecasting wouldn't be possible, because it's really just a bunch of people, we're back to the elites that are sitting in a room somewhere planning all of this, which is just a bunch of nonsense. It doesn't work that way. And only people that have some insight into the market itself can really say with great certainty that that is the case. And if you're more interested in, finding a reason why that is the case, you study the technical sides of the market more and spend some time with it and see if, and perhaps you already have done that. But I think it's a little too simple to say that's just big money turning the market. I mean, one of my great examples, I've got dozens of them, but just one of them is the Warren Buffett purchase of silver back in 08 or 09, whatever it was. or earlier even, when the silver market was at $8. Well, Warren Buffett is a big, big player in silver, and he has millions and millions of followers that do whatever he does. So I don't know what big money is to you, but Warren Buffett stepped up with a billion or more dollars, and then millions and millions of people who follow what he did, he announced his purchase, followed him and bought silver as well. So I don't know how much money those millions and millions of people had, but I'm going to go ahead and say it was several billion more dollars got put into silver at $8. And if the argument is that big money makes the pivot, if you go back and take a look at the chart, silver went down. It cut its price in half almost right after he bought it, very shortly. So he bought it at $8, and it wasn't too much further that it was actually now down at $4.25. So his billion plus millions and millions of adoring fans of his investments were pouring money into silver, and it didn't create any pivot at all. In fact, it cut the silver price right in half. So I think that's a pretty good example of the fact that it's a little too broad brushed to say the big money makes those pivots. Those pivots are actually created by other technical forces, and I think it might even be fair to say that the pivots cause the big money to come in, not the other way around. I mean, think on that for a little bit. Rather than saying that you don't need big money to turn the market.
Well, you have to have more buy orders than sell orders.
You do, and that could be at any size and any level. A market can only trade a few contracts right at a pivot. It creates a turn, and then buyers come in later. It doesn't have to be really, really big money. It could be just like on low volume, the market can rally. It can also make a pivot on very low volume. And I would tell you that that happens plenty of times. So there's other factors at work there. So consider that. Take that into consideration. Anyway, as we've been talking here, the S&P has been real quiet. This is a holiday. I told you, we know this. You know, this is why we closed down essentially. But I'm still here. But the market gets really quiet on these because people want to take the 4-day holidays, I guess, and there's just not a lot of movement here. But we are having an up day, and it is the classic, rally into the weekend. So that's into the holiday weekend, the Memorial Day, and so on. So there you are.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
It is true, Tom, that there must be more buy orders than sell orders for the market to rise. That's a fact. That's I don't know if that's physics, but it's just obvious. You must have more buy orders than sell orders for the market to rise. We understand that. So, anyway.
Look, at in the end,
No one is saying that a market will turn up without buy orders exceeding sell orders. We understand that's how the markets work. Price trades between support and resistance constantly. It's a moving target. Price rises until no one's willing to pay that price. And then price begins to fall until people see it as a bargain. They come in and start buying it. Up it goes again. Until all of a sudden people go, it's not worth this much. And the collective mind drops it. And down she goes. Until a bunch of people say, whoa, look at that bargain. And they push it back up again. So, yeah. Again, I think you're having a rough day, buddy, and so my heart goes out to you. Maybe it's the whole Memorial Day thing, but I wish you all the very best.
In the end, we're just trying to find high probability moments to take advantage of what the market may do and do it in a very consistent way so that we can have a manageable gain program where you're investing your money in the market and doing something good with it. letting positions run against you goes counter to that. It brings out bad behavior in people. When people cross a certain line, their bad behavior gets even worse. Bad meaning, you know, not managing their positions correctly. And then they finally just blow up. And that's we don't want to go there. Nobody wants to go there. But the markets are wonderful that they're here. There can be a million different theories. No one can know with absolute certainty anything about anything. You know, we know that gravity exists, but we don't know how gravity could stop existing tomorrow. I mean, take the most certain thing we think we have, and the certainty is only up till right now because you don't really know the future. But there are such a thing as probabilities, and, you know, there's all kinds of businesses that run on probabilities, and the markets are a great example of something where you can wait for the probabilities to be in your favor and really do some good trading, really put something together that allows you to have a whole string of trades, and that includes the occasional losses or stop outs, but it really, you're ahead of your own curve. You know, you're ahead of the curve. You're doing well just by simple trade selection and so on. And maybe the meaning and the how and the why of the market maybe is never known, but, you know, in terms of making money, there's people who've done enormously well with the markets, and they don't necessarily understand the markets. They just are working a program that they do feel comfortable with and are able to manage. That's all we really have to do. Life is too big. You know, you could never, if you say to yourself, listen, I have to understand every single thing in order for me to take any action at all, you'll never do anything because there's no complete understanding about anything, right, in the world. Whatever we think we understand, something's going to come along later and change that understanding. So we just have to get down to work with what we have and find some little thing that you like about the markets, hook into that. Tom has a very special way of looking at the market that nobody else has. He's going to look at it he's emphasizing certain things that may very well do him tremendous good when he puts it to work in his own trading and so on, with proper risk management and all that. And Sue over here may have a different way of looking at the market, and if she works with that and works with it, she can do well. It's the same market, but it's different people trading. That's where we're trying to head to here. In the end, we just want to have some certainty and be able to do this with some consistency. That's really right. That's what I'm saying. Isn't that what we all want? Is some consistency, and that's what we're trying to do. My form of consistency is I feel very comfortable. I'm more conservative than perhaps some people. My form of consistency is I like to, it's from day one, I like the idea of having an idea of what I thought the market was going to do in advance. That struck me my fancy. Another person might have the idea of saying, I like the fact that I don't know what's going to happen, and I'm just going to follow the trend. Another person might say, I'm just going to trade for a very small amount of money because I know I can get that easier than I can get a big amount of money, and I'll just do that a whole bunch of times. Just a complete different way of handling it, and you just find the way that really works for you. And then you don't have to worry about anybody else's opinion or anything. You found your way, like riding a bicycle. When I got on that bike and my mom is standing there and people are standing there telling me, okay, lean this way, lean that way, when I finally figure out how to ride it myself, it doesn't matter what they say anymore. I got it. You know, you got it. We can ride the bike. Now it doesn't matter what people are saying. And that's what it is with markets. If you can do it and you figured out something that connects with you, that you are in, you know, you have an intimate connection with that thing that you're doing in the market, then it doesn't matter what other people say, what their opinions are. You're going after what you understand, and you just go do that. So that's what we're all doing. I wouldn't get too lost in the minutia and the reasonings and all that stuff. There's a million different ways to look at the market. There's a million different systems and all that stuff. In the end, finally, when you find yourself doing well, it's because no matter how you got whatever method you're using, you connected with it. It made, you know, you did something with it. It connected with you internally. You got it. You're riding the bike now, and now you can do it. And that's what we're trying to do here. There's people who have written books that say the markets are random, right? And that, you know, that would be a great discouragement to somebody who believes that, you know, the only way they could trade in the markets is if they weren't random and there was some, you know, some way they could connect with the market and there see some order in it. There's 1,000,000,000 different ways for people to look at the markets, all the way from the extreme that every single thing is random, every single new bar has no connection to any previous bar at all, and there's the other side that says it's totally on rails, every movement in the market is completely preordained. You know, everyone that looks at the market sees something different. all the way from the extremes all the way down to the middle. It doesn't really matter, though. Those guys, all of them, from the one extreme to the other, can figure out something that makes it work for them. I mean, even the guy that wrote the book, for God's sakes, A Random Walk Down Wall Street, is putting out a newsletter telling people where to buy and sell based on something. So it isn't so random, right? He's written a book about it. So everyone finds their own little way, and that's what we're trying to do here. What was the author's name? Michael or Michaelis? I can't remember his name.
The guy who wrote The Random Walk Down Wall Street that we interviewed?
Yep.
His name is Mikhail.
Mikhail, that's what it is.
Here we go. We just simply go over to our friend the Internet. And then we ask our friend the Internet. We say, Random Walk, CFRN. And there we go. You guys can go out and listen. The man who wrote the book, A Random Walk Down Wall Street, was here on this radio program. We had a very nice discussion. The day of the interview is Thursday, August 16th. So I'm advertising it early here on August 9th. But you just go find August 16th in the blog, click the headphones, and you can hear he's a real nice guy, you know. He's, I think, maybe mellowed over the years. Maybe his conviction today might not be as strong as it was when he wrote the book. It's now in its 11th edition. But he still stood his ground for the most part. Mm-hmm. But we had a very nice conversation with him. So all you got to do is simply Google Random Walk CFRN, and that will take you to the interview. In fact, if I go back, we just find the one that's actually on that date. See, it's every one of these. So just click it. You'll find it. You'll find it. Google. Now we've talked enough about that. Now, Jim, I do want to comment on your question, on your comment, because lock limit up means there are no sellers and hence there is no transaction. Lock limit down means there are no buyers, and similarly there is no transaction until there are both buyers and sellers. Jim, I don't know everything, but when it comes to being locked limit up or down, the exchanges only allow a market to move a certain distance in a particular session. And so if soybeans, for instance, gap higher on the open and run the maximum limit, then they lock them there. And Bert, if you're here, you can come in and share in on that. But, I mean, that's what that means. So... And I got your other message. Where did that go? You sent an email. Yeah, this one, Jim, I feel like I'm not talking to the same Jim, because you always make really great comments. There are never more buy orders than sell orders. Never. The number of buy orders is always exactly equal to the number of sell orders, or there is no transaction.
Well, he's correct, because there has to be two sides to a transaction, a buy and a sell. So,
well, yeah, but for price to keep rising, there's got to be more on the buy side than on the sell side.
Well, what he's saying is that in order for them to be on the buy side,
to be one transaction takes, you know,
two sides.
One guy is selling 100 contracts and one guy's buying 100.
The difference between that is that there are buy orders stacking up. There's more and more people that want to buy, although the transaction requires a seller. There's more people overall that are initiating positions on the buy side, not initiating positions on the sell side. And the market gets bid up. That's how it moves higher. It gets bid up. And so people are willing to pay a higher price for that same thing. It's true that when they pay the higher price, there's a seller on the other side of that, but there's more of those people willing to pay the high price than there are people willing to pay willing to do the opposite. And that's how it works. He's exactly correct that the orders, you know, obviously each one of those orders has a buy and a sell, but there's more people that are bidding the price up that want to buy at yet higher prices. They're willing to pay a higher price. And when they pay that higher price, they trigger a sell order on the other side of that. But that doesn't mean the market goes down. That means that they've just posted a new high price. And at some point, that whole process will reverse and the market will ultimately go down. I mean, that's the mechanics of the market. But he is correct, obviously. Each one of these orders is each buy and sell order itself has to go together. There are no buys right without a sell. So
we've chased our tail now for a long time on this whole thing, so everybody's had a chance to disagree with everybody else, so we're going to leave it at that.
Okay.
Google is punishing major web brands for publishing spammy content. They rolled out Panda 4.0 a couple days ago, and this is the first time that we've seen the big boys, the legitimate companies. The one they did last year was to go after the payday lenders. There's been Penguin and there's Panda, but this 4.0, this is really big. Yesterday we told you that up to 80% of eBay's Prime Search result listings had been banished from the first Google results page. Now, I got to tell you guys, if you have any kind of a business, small business, whatever kind of business, and if you depend upon the internet for traffic, if you don't show up on the first page, you're hurting. It makes it very difficult. This is the first time, though, that we've seen it happen to big names like Ask.com, A&E's Biography. The question is, here's some numbers. Ask.com, their traffic is down 50%. eBay is down 33%. Biography.com, down 33%. The Examiner, down 50%. Now, on the other side, Glassdoor.com, which I've never heard of, up 100%. They're pretty happy. eMedicineHealth.com up 500%. 500%. MedTerms.com, 500%. Zimbio. We don't even know what Zimbio is. What is Zimbio? Let's find out. Zimbio. Wow. That's Zimbio. Okay, it's celebrity gossip, Hollywood-based stuff, which people seem to like. So the question is did Google get this wrong, and are they going to have to go back in and redo this? Note that the winners list features sites that publish original, useful, or interesting content. You might not like BuzzFeed's designed to go viral content, but you can't deny there's a certain wit and originality about it. BuzzFeed isn't simply aping other sites. To give you an idea of the content that Google is now essentially hiding from users, here's what Eric Ng, CEO at Stone Temple Consulting, told the Search Engine Journal about the simple act of searching for a recipe for French toast. There are over 31,000 results. There is no need for more than 5 articles on how to make French toast. It's really easy. You can't win by writing a new article on something that has already been covered many times before. So the question you have to ask yourself today is, what are you going to do that stands out? What are you going to do that's exceptional? Learning how to answer this question may well take practice. This is a really big deal. When companies like eBay lose 33% of their traffic, and Biography and all of these other ones. I don't know what a lot of them do. Those are big numbers. Now, the little guys have gotten in Google's face in the past because of these changes in the search algorithm, but you can have a very successful business with tons and tons of traffic, and then all of a sudden one day you come in and it's like somebody turned off the faucet. It can happen, and you have no control over it, and there are things you can do to figure out, you know, what it is in the new algorithm. Doesn't like you, you can work to fix it, you can appeal and ask them to come back and look at you again, but it's a very arduous process, and it's usually people who are at the extremes, one end or the other, that end up getting punished, but this is the first time that we've seen the big names get punished, and they're being punished because their content is considered to be duplicate, thin, or useless, created simply for the purpose of getting search traffic from Google. Google has always said that the number one goal of its search engine is to point readers to the highest quality web pages possible and to bury results for low quality sites. So this search metrics ranking of Panda 4.0 losers is also a backhanded way from Google on how it feels about the quality of the material being published. So for any of you that have websites, web pages, I would love to hear from you if Panda 4.0 had any effect on you at all. I think we may have seen a slight uptick. I got to check the numbers. But anyway, let me see what else we got in the chat box here. There was a question asked twice. In your S&P 500 product, David, does that include NASDAQ calls?
We do include NASDAQ. I want to say we're new to the NASDAQ, and we have made two or three successful calls in it, but it's a new market to us, and a chart isn't a chart, so you know these markets are all different. But we found that the NASDAQ does trade very nicely so far. So we have, and we are, it's available in the S&P product as well. Now, I just want to say real briefly, I think it's one of the reasons that it is such a good market to trade along with the S&P, just from having seen it and started to work with it, is because quite often the NASDAQ and the S&P will run in the same direction, even though they're not in the same kind of position necessarily overall. You know, the NAS is in a very different position, nowhere near its highs and so on. But one of the things that's really great about these two markets together is that you might see a signal in the NASDAQ that you wouldn't have seen in the S&P, and yet both markets will end up running up. You might see a signal in the S&P that you wouldn't have seen in the NASDAQ, and yet both markets run up. So in a way, it's like you get 100% more opportunity to find a signal, an outlook, a forecast. Rather than just simply looking at the S&P, we can look at the NASDAQ, and it's very possible that maybe the NASDAQ is really obvious that they're going higher and going way up to this number. And therefore, we know the S&P is likely going to go as well. I don't like to trade markets by proxy that way, you know, so to speak, but it would mean that we can trade the NASDAQ because it has a forecast, and the S&P will likely move up as well. So we get two shots at kind of, you know, markets that move in the same direction. So, yes, it is. It is available in there for you. It's not in there right now, but we have announced it, and it's going to be in probably within a week or so. There's some software involved to make it, you know, available, so when we send it out, it all goes to you. So if you want, you can call in, and let me give our phone number out. We rarely talk about what we do here. You know, we're in the business of forecasting markets. We do trade those markets. We have, you know, people that trade this particular way, which is longer term style trading, multi-day, multi-week swing trading, and we've been very successful at it. We continue to, you know, we work very hard, like we all do, at making putting these trades together and trying to manage the risk, do all the things that we've talked about, do the right thing. Success is a series of right decisions, and that is what we do. So if you want to check out what we do, you can give us a call, not today, because we're actually closed, 888-231-4702, 888-231-4702, and check out. Take a two-week trial. Take a look at what it is that we do, and you might find it very useful. We have a lot of interesting trades, I think, that are coming up in the near future, and some of them we're in right now that I think are going to continue to work in our favor. So I'm looking forward to I'd love to hear your opinion or your outlook if you do take a look at what we're doing, if it's something that might be useful in your trading. So there you go.
Did I hear somebody in the background there?
Oh, you're talking to me or...
Yeah, I thought I heard somebody talking in the background.
No, no, I'm empty here. It's just me.
Okay. David, did you have some charts you wanted to show?
Well, it's a pretty quiet market today. We have, you know, I think we'd be better off. I could certainly show some charts. I mean, I'd be very happy to. But I think also because of the quietness of the markets, there's a few markets that are running really good. But I wonder if there's any questions about any particular market that we could answer
for
people.
Well, there was one question here about crude. And then we'll go ahead and bring our guest Ed on a little bit early.
Sure.
And we'll chat with him for a bit. Let me find that question. There was a question. David, do you show a weekly top in crude next week? Thanks. Have a great Memorial Day weekend.
Thank you, and I hope you do as well. And the crude oil market, we have been talking about for some time that the month of May would be a very important turn, likely as a bottom in crude for a very powerful advance. We've given out the numbers prior to May of where we think it's going. And so far, May, actually very, very late April, put the bottom in 2 days before May. We've made a bottom at 98.74, and they're now moving up quite strongly. This is a current forecast. I can't give out all the details with regard to price targets and so on, but he's asking a question about the S&P, about the – no, I don't show that, but if you want to call me at some point – whoever asked that question, I'd be very happy to answer it and help them with it. So I do think, just as a general thing, and stay with me just a split second here. What I was going to say is that I do believe crude is going to move higher into next week, and the week of May 26th is very important for us, and we think that this force that is at work is not over yet. So for those of you that may be long or have sold puts or anything like that, Birch Lichter, as an example, based on this whole outlook, has a number of people, our customers and others, that are in this larger move up in crude oil, and we're going to continue to hold into next week for higher prices. We don't have a reflected wave weekly top next week, but we do have... The week itself is very important, and I think we'll address whether or not we think that's turning point material or not at that time, if you ask me next week. Right now, we want to see the continued forecast move up, because we've been forecasting that the market would move higher into the week of May 26th since the week of May 12th, and we're seeing that, and we want to get through that portion of it. I'm not quite ready to speak about the subsequent part of that. So.
Okay.
And Duane, if you want to bring your guest on, you certainly can, unless there's any other questions for...
Yeah, there's one question for you, David. In your trading, do you consider recent price action, the most recent price bars, more important than price action from the past, or the opposite?
That is a big question. I could answer it in two ways. First, in my normal voice, and then in sort of a silly high-pitched whine. That's from Monty Python. Many years ago. It used to be funny on this program, but no one laughs at my stuff anymore.
It really was.
I think of the market more holistically in the sense of not dividing it into meaningfulness for past being localized, you know, nearby, and past being more distant. So I think the answer to the question is I am going to look at the market from every perspective, and I'm going to use all of the information in my next trade as best as I can. And many times you look and there's nothing there, and so then you're left with a certain, maybe you're left with only certain information that you can use. So you go and use that information, whatever it is. I think human psychology very much favors recent price action. I think human psychology looks at the market and says, I know mine did, that, okay, this is the nearby stuff, this is what's current, this is how they're going to act. That's what the psychology of most people, I think, are.
The market does have a powerful memory, though.
It does have a powerful memory, and I think you would be wise to think of the market wider spectrum, you know, more holistically, or I don't know what the better word than holistically, but just containing a lot more than just, you know, the current price action, because that's where, again, a lot of people will think, well, it's doing this right now, and that means it's about to do this or that. I'm not so sure that that's, you know, the whole, in fact, I'm pretty sure that's not the whole picture. So, you know, you might want to consider that. I think there are certain methodologies that certainly the recent price action is very important because they're trading off of it. You know, they're saying, look, this thing happened here, and then this thing happened here, and that's it. And we're going to put a trade base together on that. So I kind of think it has to do, honestly, with the depth of your methodology. And by depth of your methodology, I mean if you're looking everything there's a simplistic kind of way you can look at it, and there's deeper solutions to the market. And those solutions don't necessarily favor any one particular period of time. But there's information in all of it, and when you put a trade together, you end up utilizing whatever is most appropriate for that trade. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but it's a deep one because the market is fully connected from the first. It's like a snake. It's one long piece all connected up. So I don't know that, you know, I know the random people don't believe it's connected in any way, shape, or form, but I've used this analogy before that, you know, it's kind of like a river. It's kind of like a river, and it everything that happens in that river happens to the whole river. It doesn't just happen to one part of the market. So, therefore, it's like saying the whole river is important, and right now is important. Everything is important. Maybe that's the best answer. Everything's important. Maybe that's the easiest way to put it.
It all matters, man.
It all matters, yeah. All right, so I don't want to delay your guest anymore. I know he's waiting.
Okay, guys, I already gave him an introduction at the top of the hour. I'll let him tell you who he is and what he's done. We all understand the retail side of trading. We're the little guy. We're the guy behind the desk, and they're all out to get us, and they're moving the markets, and they're doing this, and they're doing that. Well, Ed has experience being on the other side of the desk. So I am going to unmute your mic right now. Ed, welcome to the show.
Hello, Dwayne. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, but we're going to need to bring your volume up just a little bit. You got a way to do that there?
Let's see. I don't know if I do. I probably do, but I don't know how to do it.
Get closer to your microphone. Wherever your microphone is, that's where you need to get closer to.
Does it make a difference here?
Much better there, and if you move even closer, you'll probably be even better.
Okay, I just don't want to gag on this thing.
Not that close.
Is this okay?
Yeah,
and then your speakers might want to be turned down because we're hearing an echo, which means that's the delay.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I plugged my mic in, and I had to call in on the phone to get the
Do you have a headset?
So I'm on the phone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if you don't have a headset, Ed, it might be better to just dial in.
I do have a headset. I've got one on.
Oh, you do?
All real radio people have headsets, Ed.
Well, this is a Walmart special.
Okay, all right, I got
you. It's okay. Some of the best ones are the $20 ones.
I agree with you there.
The worst ones are the $150 ones, so.
Well, I'll try and keep it right in front of my mouth, and I'll turn this down a little bit. Otherwise, I won't be able to hear what you say. Is it that bad?
Why won't you be able to hear what we say?
Well, because I'm hearing it through the speaker on my phone, not on my computer. When I plug this thing in, it cut out my speakers on my computer.
Okay. Well, here's what I'm thinking is all you need... If you're saying that you're listening, why don't you just dial in on your phone? Can you do that? I mean, I don't want to run up a big bill for you long-distance-wise.
It's already dialed in, Dwayne.
Okay, so why don't you just talk to us over the telephone?
I will do that. That sounds like a really high-tech way to fix it, but I'm with you.
It's higher tech than what we're using now.
Sorry about that, guy. If I wanted to put a screen up, Dwayne, would I still be able to do it?
You're not going to disconnect from the webinar.
Okay.
All you're going to do is just talk to us over the telephone.
Yeah. That's my kind of deal. The last time I talked into this thing, I was talking to Dragon. Okay. Well, Dwayne, that was a really nice introduction.
Well, I'll give you a real one now that you're here.
Myself. I want to say I'm still looking for that guy you were talking about. Anyway.
No, you do have some good experience. You have worked, at a number of... number of places. You've got 16 years experience in the petroleum industry. You were manager and director of futures and product trading at a refining company in Texas. At PetroSource Corp, you were vice president of products and futures. Also president of a subsidiary company, PetroSource Energy. And during this time, you directed the hedging and trading of several hundred million barrels in the futures and cash markets. You've done some consulting, you've written some programs, you manage some money, some hedge fund money, some foundation money, some corporation money. Basically, for 20 years, you've been in the business of trading in the energy markets, but trading in a little larger size than what most of us are probably accustomed to, correct?
Yeah, I've actually been trading in the energy market since 1985. But I will say this. I have tried a lot of different things through the years. And I tried using fundamentals to trade. I tried using technicals to trade. But what I knew when I started is I didn't know anything. So I tried to find the right people.
Your volume's really dropping off there, Ed.
My volume's dropping off?
Yeah. Yeah. Are you on the telephone now?
I'm
just
on the
talking?
Telephone, no speaker.
Huh.
I don't know why it's doing that.
You can call me.
God. Normally tell you what, try this, Ed. Hang up and call this number toll free, 866-928-3310. Bert will patch you into the show, and I bet you we get a crystal clear connection. Let's try that. 866. Don't close your screen or anything. Okay.
Yep, here he's calling. I got him.
Now, how is it I can hear you calling? I shouldn't be able to hear you dial that number.
Yeah, Bert. I was hoping you were on the show. Okay.
Hey, can you hear me now? Ed?
Uh-huh.
Ed, you got to hang up that other phone and just talk to Bert.
How's that? Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, Bert, I can hear you. Ed?
Yes.
Hang up the phone you're talking to me on and just pick up the phone where you called Bert on.
Okay, now I'll try it. Ed, are you there?
I am here.
Dwayne?
Yep, we got you.
Okay. Now, what you want to do, Ed, is probably turn your volume down on your end because we'll hear echoes.
On the computer?
Yeah.
Okay. Now I'll be able to hear everything on the phone that I need, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Perfect. It's a perfect
sign. We finally got that done. And
how about that?
It's really something. I feel like a real wizard here already, technically.
Yeah. Okay. So tell us, you know, I gave you the fancy intro with the 16 years of the broad experience, but how did you get started in the energy markets? What was your first job? What did you do?
Well, I was a manager of operations of the refinery. I came up through an engineering background and ended up in that position. And at that time, we had... When they put me in charge of the refinery, the thing had just blown up and killed 6 people. And they kind of cleaned out the old guard and brought in new people. Not that it was their fault, but it was, it was really problematic for quite some time, but we pretty much rebuilt the refinery. And thank God we had insurance. And so I was initially thrown into, help with the investigation of what happened and negotiate with the insurers on the settlement, which I was a pretty young guy at the time. And we got that done, and the executive VP of the company, it happened like this. I walked into work one day, and he was sitting behind my desk. I turned the light on, the lights were out, and I hardly ever saw this fellow except once a month when I gave him my project review. We were building the gasoline unit. I'm going to go quick here. He kind of shocked me. I said, "Mr. Hauser, how you doing?" Because he was sitting in my office before, you know, hours, and I got there right on time before, you know, a little before hours. I got there right on time, and there he was. He says, "Well, Ed," he said, "we've been looking at some things here, and we're going to have to make some changes." And I said, "Oh, okay." He said, "And here's what it is." He said, "I want to have you report to me. We're going to go ahead and take a look at what happened in this refinery, and we're going to fix some things. And you're no longer going to be doing project management," which was my engineering and construction background. And I said, "Well, Mr. Hauser, I'm not sure I really want to, I really like my job. I'm sure I want to make that leap." So he said, "Well," he got up from behind my desk. He said, "Well," he said, "you better think about it real quick because the message is being typed up right now. It's going to be out on the bulletin boards in 5 minutes." And that's the way it is. So he said, "What do you think?" And I said, "I'm game."
Let's do it.
So I was a little shocked, but I knew that I had him behind me with changes and stuff, so I had to really learn pretty quick. But that was when I went into the, he put all these departments under me. Most of the guys were 60, and I was about 30 years old at the time. But they didn't like some pimple-faced kid in there with them, so I really had to learn. I had to get on my knees every night, read my Proverbs, which I was always told to do for business, and, you know, that pretty much guided me through this, but a couple of years later, they put me in charge of running the refinery, which was a really crazy job, and
you know, albeit it was, I felt pretty good that they would trust me with that. But then we used to get bonuses in our ESOP program. And basically little shares of the company, even though it wasn't public. But what happened was we achieved all our goals in operating units. This was 1984. We had been doing really good, and I had a good crew of people that worked with me and protected me, really, because I was the young guy. They had all the experience. I just was a businessman, basically. So we went through that, and what happened was, in going through all that, we didn't get our bonuses, yet we broke all the operating rates and efficiency rates and cut our expenses and our lost time accidents. We overachieved all our goals, and I went in and talked to him, and I said, look, we've worked harder than we've ever worked this year, and I've just been in the job a couple of years. I said, and the reason we're losing money is because we're sitting here buying crude oil from Africa at a fixed price. It takes about 40 to 50 days to get it here. Then we refine it. Then we put it in the pipes and sell it up the Colonial Pipeline and ship it to our customers. Well, the problem was, before this futures market started, which I believe was 1983, everything was stable because the energy companies, through their vertical integration from the production to the distribution to the refining to the marketing, they had control of the prices. And they kept a comfortable refining margin all the time. They pretty much had control of everything. But the futures market disrupted that because it enabled people to get into the market and speculate with it in an easy way. And so we started getting all this volatility in the market. And that volatility really crushed the people that were just in the refining business, because we were sitting here, prices turned down, and we're selling. You can imagine taking a trade, going long, but not being able to sell for 50 or 60 days later.
Right.
Okay, that's the position we found ourselves in. And I went in and I talked to them about it. They said, well, we lost all this money. We can't possibly give anybody bonuses. I said, well, what can we do about it? You know, I said, we got to do something. I knew about the futures market. I actually bought my first heating oil contract in my own account in 1983. I did not know what I was doing. I didn't even look at it. We ended up, I convinced the executive committee to find somebody to bring in to set up a hedging program so that we could hedge this stuff. Because basically, you can do it in the futures market. You can, getting a little bit off track here. Let me come back to this point here a little later. Let me just say something about hedging, because that's what we set up, the hedging program. And I who was complaining the most, they said, we're going to hire somebody. We got some search people coming in, and we're getting the friend said, I'll hire somebody who knows what he's doing. So after about 2 months, he called me in his office and he said, I've interviewed about 8 people. He said, most of them are from the Northeast. Nothing wrong with that. But he said, I don't know any of them like you. And he said, this thing sounds like, from what we've learned, that the whole purse strings of the company are be sitting here relying on the decisions that are being made. And he said, we just can't trust somebody we don't know with that. So he said, you're not running the refinery anymore. You're going to run the futures. So that's the answer, long answer to your short question. Okay. That's how I got into it.
Now, is this back in the day when you had to call in your orders, or did you have computer access at this point? How are you trading?
Well, I had CQ. The first thing I got was CQG. Because I went in and I talked to some people.
So what year was this?
1985.
85.
I still have it sitting on.
What were
desk.
We running?
I don't know what I'd do about it.
Did Windows even exist in 85?
No, it ran on CQG. Ran on their own system.
Okay.
They had their own operating system. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So you had to do the whole boat with them. But what I liked about them is they were really
good with data. Their data is pretty impeccable. It's clean, and it's fixed if it's not. So I just went with that because one of the guys who was one of my brokers told me they were the best, and he had it. And he was kind of trying to coach me through this. So we had designed a hedging program, and I just did it by going up to Boston and meeting with a guy who had just made this great presentation to the American Petroleum Institute. And I hired him to come spend 8 hours a day with me for 4 days till I could figure it out with him. He taught me a lot, but he didn't teach me how to trade. The thing about trading here, and David was talking about low volume, that the size, you know, if you're trading size, the word of wisdom was always never sell a quiet market. That was it, because you could really get caught if you were doing any kind of size in the market. And that was really important. So I really agree with them on the low volume. I'm not sure I totally agree with them, and I'm sure he'd want to debate if he's here, the high volume, but I'm not going to get into it right now. I want to get back on track. I'm not getting anywhere here, Dwayne. How much time do we have left?
Oh, we still got a half hour. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Let me just talk about hedging. I'm going to lead to something that will show you why it's important. You know, the management of risk is necessary in every successful business. That's why they have insurance against fire, casualty, product liability insurance, other serious threats are the traditional means corporations use to obtain protection against unacceptable risks. Well, it's often present, particularly in oil companies, is a greater potential risk in the volatile price of products bought or sold in the course of business operations. The company I worked for did not have to worry about in the past, but we really had to deal with it right away because we had negative cash flow going on for 2 years. So the process by which the company can protect itself against the impact of these fluctuations of physical commodities is known as hedging. And participants, a hedge is taking, can I put something up on the screen, Dwayne?
Yeah, sure. Let me just switch it over to you.
I think I might as well go into the spreads on this.
Just a minute.
Boy, what is it doing? Let me move it. Hmm.
Okay, there we go. Okay, you got to click OK on your screen.
Show my screen?
Okay. Yep, show your screen.
All right.
Now... we're seeing just your Windows background. I don't know if that's the one you wanted to show. Or there you go. Okay. Gotcha. Perfect. You did that like an old pro.
Okay. This is the energy market. This is a quote screen of the energy market. And I'm just going to describe how a hedge works. We are sitting there buying crude oil and selling products. In general, about 60% of the barrel is gasoline, and about 30% is neal distillates, which would include heating oil, diesel, and kerosene. The other 10% is butane, propane, and off-gas stuff. Now, you have to have several processing units to get it there, but that's pretty much how a complex refinery would do it. So if you take a look at this, and I'm going to see, why is it doing that? Go in a moment and take it up. The top row across is crude oil. And,
sorry, say that again.
More room. Can you see this now, Dwayne? Can you see more of the screen?
Yep.
Okay.
I can see all the way over to Clem 5.
Yes, Yes. So here we are. This is the whole year of crude oil prices. And you can see what the market's telling you a lot of times by the backwardation or contango in the market. Backwardation meaning the front month is the higher month. But the price of crude right now is 104.31, up 55 cents for July crude. If we go out to June crude of next year, it's $94.10. So let's say it's discounted 10 cents over the course of a year, $10 over the course of a year. So this is a market that says, I'm not really worried about inflation going out. I'm more concerned with it now. And if we look at gasoline, it's kind of the same way. June gasoline here, June RBOB gasoline, which is trading at about 302 there, the one right under July crude. And May RBOB gasoline is sitting out there at 280. So there's a 21-cent differential in that. And heating oil is pretty flat. It's 295, and it's only going down to 290. Heating oil on a global posture is in better position than gasoline. It's in a stronger position. But over the short term here now, gasoline should be stronger than heating oil because we're in the time of the year where we see good demand show up. But by the time we get to the July 4th holiday, gasoline is usually struggling on a relative scale. So what a refiner does is he buys crude oil and he sells gasoline and heating oil, right? That's the way he runs his physical market. So for us, when we would buy the crude oil, before we'd make a decision to buy crude oil, we would take a look at what the spreads were the next month and the next month out on the difference between crude oil and gasoline's price and the difference between crude oil and heating oil's price and use the ratios that fit our refinery to build what is called a crack spread. The refiners trade these all the time as spreads. But in this case, if we look down to the 1, 2, 3, the fifth row here, we've got an RBECLEN. Can you see that down near the bottom on the left?
Can I see which one?
RBECLEN.
Okay.
2185.
Yeah, I see it.
Yeah. Okay. That is the crack spread. Basically, gasoline is $21.87 more than the price of crude. Okay, that is the spread between gasoline and crude in dollars. So, $21.85 per barrel. Okay? That's the profit margin for gasoline in a refinery that buys it here and sells it in New York Harbor, or buys it at this WTI price, so the New York Harbor. The next lower one is heating oil spread. So we do 60% of the sales. If we bought 1 million barrels of crude, we sell 600,000 barrels of gasoline, and we sell 300,000 barrels of heating oil. Only we wouldn't sell it right here. If we were buying July crude, we would sell August products because we're going to make the products after the crude is bought. That most of the time I wouldn't buy the crude, I'd just sell the products when the guys on the supply side would physically buy the crude. This is how these markets work. The energy market is intertwined more than any of them. Even though we do have stuff going on in the soybeans and the crush spread, they call it over there for the bean oil. This has got bukus of volume trading off these numbers here. In the way we would buy our crude, before we would just fix the price of crude, but it got to the point where there was so much volatility in the markets, no one would want to sell you a fixed price of crude, which was fine with us, so we would set the price of our cargo, of the closing price of NYMEX the day before we got the cargo, and that would be one-third of it, one-third on the day we received the cargo, one-third of it on the day after the cargo, the close of the NYMEX, for those 3 days, the middle day being the day of delivery, that would set our price of crude, and we could take it from there when we decided to hedge. It all depended on the numbers and how much more value was in the product. So that's called a crack spread, and this is called the gas crack, this RBECLEN. It's traded It's not real liquid, but you can do enough size in it to do well. We had to usually go ahead and sell the outrights to get the volume in the commercial end of it. We had to do the, you know, we'd be selling actually July gasoline the second row down two over. So but the point here is that there's a lot of dynamics that tie the energy complex together. And one of them is refining. The other one is there's a lot of people that trade the front to back spreads. And right now you can see the crude spread from the front to back is about almost a dollar, July over August. And we go to August over September, it's even a little more. Now, I want, do you have any questions, Wayne, or am I getting too messy here?
No, you're not getting too messy. Guys in the chat room, let me know if you're following him, if you understand. I mean, every day we go into the live trading room, we buy crude futures, and we don't even think about all this. What Ed is attempting to explain to you is something fairly complex, but
maybe questions there's a lot of trading opportunities in the spreads. And I used to advise this guy who's really the best trader I've ever been with. And if I told him I thought crude was going up, he would say, and he's so connected to the physical market, he said, well, okay, I'm going to buy gasoline. He hardly ever buy the vehicle that I told him to. He would buy the cheapest one on a relative scale that he thought he'd get more money out of, whether it be heating oil or gasoline. Or if he wanted to just play the crude, and we were bullish on it, he would buy the July crude, and he might sell the September against it. We had to trade through wars and everything else, and when you do that, a spread position is less risky, normally, so as opposed to an outright. But you can still lose a lot of money on the spreads. Anytime the crude oil market's going to sit there and go into a trading range for weeks sometimes, but these gasoline cracks and heating oil cracks, they don't go in trading ranges very long. They go with the supply and demand. So when we talk about supply and demand here, the key to remember on inventories, because I've heard this so many times in trading, well, inventories are at record highs. How can this thing be going up? How many times have you heard that they're running out of this stuff? It's got, you know, they're running out of this stuff, and it's still going down. Well, those kind of things happen in commodity markets. They go below the cost of production until there's enough pain that it causes people to shut down. We used to operate the refinery when we were losing money. That may sound stupid, but it costs a lot of money to put down a big piece of machinery and bring it back up again. A lot. And you've got people that you're going to pay regardless. So it comes down to, even though it may be less than our break-even costs, we're still marginally better off to run the refinery at a loss. Because we're going to pay the people. We're not going to permanently off people because the market has a fluctuation, which is why we needed the hedging program. So I'm really, this is so much more in depth than I wanted to go here. The point to a trader that I think is important is the inventory levels don't really matter. What matters is the day's supply of forward cover inventory. It's the inventory levels relative to the demand. The demand and the supply are definitely dynamic. They're changing, but they do have trends within themselves. And you can see the trends, the net trend, in the day's supply of oil. And like, the inventory report came out yesterday. And let me get it here. I wanted to talk a little bit about it. The DOE releases a weekly inventory report on Wednesday for petroleum products and crude, and on Thursday for natural gas. And they released one yesterday, okay? The day supply forward cover for May 16th on 2013 was 24.5 days of inventory. And we have much higher inventories this year. On an absolute basis, we're near the upper part of the range, within the upper 10% of the range of normal. So we're near the upper end. And so it was 24.5 days cover last year. This year it's 22.8. That's where it is as of yesterday. 2 days might not sound like much, but you need a certain amount of that inventory just to keep things flowing. So when things tighten up on the days of supply of inventory, it's a better way than saying supply and demand, because I tried for years to make sense out of supply and demand, and I didn't learn this until a friend of mine taught it, who's an energy analyst and is really sharp. He knows much more than me. He tracks this. He considers this a really good indicator for, and it's why they can have short squeezes and big problems when things go off the board. That's when you see how tight the inventories are on expiration. And you'll see the market starting to show its hand about 5 days before. So we're kind of in that phase here with the products right now. And we'll have to see how they go. Heating oil is never usually strong this time of the year. But it starts up the heating oil usually turns when the farm planting, the fall planting season starts, and then it runs into the heating season, and then it takes the lead. But for all the years I've traded this thing, it's just been within the last 3 years when heating oil has been able to stay up with gasoline like it is right now.
So how can a retail trader, benefit from this?
Well, the day supply, this is a summarized thing, and I don't have the EIA puts out a weekly petroleum supply report. They put it out on Wednesday for the crude and product. They put out on Thursday for natural gas. In there, they show the day's supply of gasoline and diesel. Mm-hmm. So you can get a handle on how many days supply there is, and they show the history of it. So you can tell when things are starting to tighten up. And usually when they get in the tighter end of the range, you start to see the front months start to gain relative to the back. And that's what's going on with gasoline right now, because we had some pretty good demand numbers the last couple of weeks in gasoline. And that's showing, even though gasoline inventories don't. Okay, so it's demand. And days supply that are important. Days supply. So, how a guy could benefit from this is if you watch these spreads, you can do technical analysis on them. Okay? Let me see here if I can.
Ed, I pasted the EIA and API last week and the link to the EIA government site.
Yeah.
If that helps. I just sent that to you and Dwayne.
Okay.
Because I trade the curve just as you do.
Uh-huh.
So I'm really familiar with what you're talking about. So if you want to, so what you're saying is, you know, maybe what guys should do is not necessarily look at the advertised number of supply and demand. So this week it was minus 10 million barrels. They should maybe cut it up and actually look for the forward. What was it called?
Day supply forward cover.
Cover. Okay.
Let me see. You know, they put an initial report out at 10:30, and they put the full report out at 1:00. Mm-hmm. The 1:00 number is the one you got to sift through it in the gasoline and the diesel engine, and it will show you the day supply forward cover.
Okay.
It's in crude too, but you kind of got to hunt for it. I've got a friend who I trade advice with. You know, I trade him technical advice, and I get his analysis. So I don't usually delve into those reports, but they're there, and that's where he's coming up with it.
Okay.
Along with, he's got his own stuff that's, you know, that he calls proprietary, so.
Sure.
But right now, we've got, you know, we're tightening up on our supply, period. That's the crude. That's the supply of crude oil. And if you look at crude on a historical basis, for this time of the year, really at the high end of the range on crude, very high. So, but the other caveat here is, do you do anything relative to Cushing and what's going on in pad two? I don't even know if I'm going to go there on this talk.
You're probably confused. Cushing, Oklahoma is a delivery point.
Right.
For guys that don't know what that is. There's
right.
different delivery points. Guys that are trading the crude and the curve and what the crack spreads that it's talking about, Cushing's, you know, people will look at the Cushing number pretty closely.
Right. Because it's been trending lower
right.
for several months. It's dropped actually from 41 million barrels to 23 million barrels just over the last three or four months, which is a big drop. We're getting down to, you know, this talking about days supply inventory, that's getting tighter. And that day supply I gave you was for the United States, excluding the SPR.
Okay.
So, let me see if I can get this.
Also, guys, while Ed's looking for that, what he's saying, too, in a nutshell, is what you're seeing is the top row of his CQG. That's what we call the curve, all right, July being the front month, and you work your way back in time. And another way to play crude oil, instead of taking an outright position going long or an outright position going short, like Ed briefly described, what one can do is if you had a bullish outlook on crude and the technicals were saying it should go higher and we got some fundamentals behind it, what one would do in theory is they would go long maybe July, which is up 57 points, and maybe sell September,
right,
which is up 49 points. So then you're asking yourself, well, how the heck do I make money if I'm long one and short the other? The way that happens is you are making the difference between the two. So if you're up 58 on one and minus 49 in another, well, you've made 9 cents or 90 bucks per contract. And so you'll see a lot of CTAs, larger traders, trade the curve to reduce risk so they don't have the exposure on their books. There's also some big margin benefits to it. Instead of spending $3,000-$4,000 for a crude oil on the outright, if you're trading tier one, tier two, those margins could be as low as, you know, cut in half, and as you work toward the back end of the curve, it could be as low as $200-$400 per spread. So
right.
it may not seem like, wow, that's only I only made 90 bucks, but if you know, now your risk has been cut in half and your margin requirement now is only $500 or $600, you know, the return on equity is a little bit more attractive. So, actually, you know, it kind of seems like there's a lot going on here, but inside the headline here, there's actually something that's very commonly taking place here, and it's kind of foreign because people don't understand spreads, and actually, you could really use it to your advantage with some time and, you know, with some knowledge of it, so.
Okay. And the spreads move in times when the outrights are in
yes.
congestion. And you
correct.
Can't make a dime while they're chopping around. The spreads, you got two markets that have to sit still for them to stay that way. And that's usually not the case. So,
right.
So Bert, Jeff asked a good question. He says, is there any way that a CFRN partner can put the CFRN indicator set to work using our methodology, our way of trading, and integrate this type of bigger picture information?
On a four tick range scale, no.
Okay.
If you were going to do it on more of a, you know, take that same indicator set and maybe apply it to a daily, hourly, maybe a 4-hour or larger time frame, then I think so. Then I think you
okay.
can. Because it'll help, like Ed just said, it's not only a fundamental trade, but I use it from a technical standpoint.
And right. You can. The technicals apply to the spreads.
Yeah, absolutely. So So
I wanted to just make a comment here too about the importance of this WTI at Cushing is another thing that people play off of. And a big spread that's traded. WTI used to be, I think it's a, let me bring it over my.
Say that
can
again.
I only get one thing over on this thing, Wayne, or can I put something on top of the screen?
You can put something on top of it, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, we see that.
This is a price difference between Brent crude, which is produced in the North Sea, and WTI, which is West Texas Intermediate in Oklahoma, is the delivery point in Cushing. With all the production that we've had that came into play in the mid-continent, the traditional spread, you look at it, this is starting from like 2006. WTI usually traded right even, close to even, back and forth about a $2 band, about plus or minus $2 relative to Brent crude, which is QO. Well, the production really started kicking up in here in 2010, and they filled up Cushing with more oil than they could have. Cushing used to be the marker crude that the world would use many times to price their crude oil in the physical market. Like I was telling you the day before, the day of, and the day after delivery, using the closing price. So if you ever see games on the close on the energy market, there's people on both sides of that thing trying to get their way. Because they, you know, if they can save themselves 10 cents a barrel and they bought 2 million barrels, they got a good chunk of money out of it. So there's all kinds of strategies going on with that on the close. Now, point here is if you look at this chart, it's hanging around zero up until around 2010. And they filled Cushing up with oil that they couldn't get rid of. They started building more tanks to hold it. And so what happened was Brent went over $20 a barrel, $25 a barrel over Cushing. And you can see for the past 10 years it had never been over $3. This was an amazing move. So the spread here, the Brent to WTI spread, is a really active spread. And so they put the tanks in. They keep producing. But the pipelines, many of the pipelines that were going from our Gulf Coast up to Cushing, because people were buying crude all overseas, shipping it into our port here, and we sent it up from Houston up to Oklahoma. And those pipes were there, but no one was bringing it in because it didn't pay to buy it overseas. It paid to export it, and we had no way to really export it. So they reversed these pipelines here, and just you can see the first drop it there in 2012. They started reversing the pipelines, and they had to build other pipelines just to export the crude out of the country. And that brought WTI back to more of its normal. It's still not quite there, but it's more of its normal price range. But that's a big aberration that people made a lot of money in the oil business on trading this thing. And that's not an outright position. You're getting, you know, $5-$10 moves pretty easy in it. So that's how the chart can show you what's going on in physical markets, because there's the proof. That's exactly what happened. We got all this new supply in the mid-continent. We filled up Cushing and to the brim. And then they started working, well, how can we make money? Let's get it out of here. They got it back to the Gulf Coast. And now the rest of the world, you know, we've caught up to the rest of the world because we can export it if we want to. But our guys are just buying it, you know, a lot of it's not making it out of the country. Most of it isn't. But the fact that it can go will make the arbitragers come in here and buy it and sell it overseas if there's a margin. They don't really care where they sell it. That the arbitrage guys, you know, you buy something and sell something at the same point in time and lock in a profit margin where your risk is only if the ship gets sunk or the cargo gets stolen. You know, some of these ships have secret compartments in them. We used to have to hire inspectors to go on every ship and go through all the compartments they had because they would steal your oil. They wouldn't give it off to you. Some of them had little distillers in there. They'd burn it on the voyage. So, anyway, I just wanted to point that out. I also, let me just pull up,
Okay. So the backwardation, you're trying to find, if you look at a few different things that tell you about a market, whether it's real or not, the steeper the backwardation, the stronger the squeeze is, the lower the days of supply of forward inventory. Okay, you will see that. The other thing that is pretty useful is the non-commercial net length in the market in the CFTC report, and I think they came out with one today. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, you'll see it in a couple hours.
They put it out after the market closes,
right? Yeah.
And that will show us, if you watch what the non-commercial length is doing, the market gets full when you see the commercials usually carry the bigger piece of the open interest in any of these contracts, normally. Those are the guys in the oil business. Those are the airlines. Those are the people buying forward for their supply. And the oil companies hedging any which way they want. The non-commercial net length, they segregate into large speculators and small speculators. And they may even be starting to put the hedge funds in there. Hedge funds are normally the long speculators. Or they can be short speculators. But the net length of the non-commercial length, which is the small guys and the big guys on the other sides of the trades, that comes out in the report. And you can see if this market comes off, that net length, commercial net length, non-commercial net length, starts dropping. And you can watch it drop. The faster this thing goes down, the more it drops. And normally when you see it go negative, it's a pretty, because they predominantly like to play it to the upside. They will short the market, but they're predominantly long. They're normally buying the stuff oil companies are hedging by selling forward because they don't want the risk. They want to lock in their margins while they have it. So I'm going to give you more on that. And I'm not comfortable giving it much of it to you right now, but there are certain levels. You can actually do your own if you can plot it on your screen. I think CQG has a add-on for it. But when you plot it onto your screen next to the price of crude and watch the non-commercial net length, that's the thing to look at because it'll tell you if there's any more people to get flushed out of the market. The commercials have a lot deeper pockets than the speculators. They have a lot. They have, on the other side, they have a physical barrel that they don't need to get out. They can even make delivery if they need to. That's not a problem to them. They do it. Not often, but they do it. So the fact that they can do it means they don't need to panic like somebody who's just got an outright position, which are the speculators. So those kind of things, if I had to say what two fundamentals are the most important things, I would say that is, and I call that a fundamental, you could call it a technical if you wanted, and the day supply forward cover. And then there's a thing called risk premium, because the hedge funds, when there's an imminent war or something going on, those guys anticipate that, and they build up the outrageous size on the long side. And there is a war premium in the market right now. And you can say, well, nothing's going to happen with Russia and Ukraine, but there's a lot of stuff going on. Libya is really hardly producing any oil. The sanctions really aren't lifted on Iran yet. They haven't shoved out anymore since we said we were easing them up. It hasn't made a difference. So the hot spots and the potential that something could happen has probably got, right now the market's probably $10 higher than it should be, in my opinion. But it should be here because this is where price says it is. And, you know, you don't want to fight the price. You don't want to fight it. When I first started trading, I tried to fight the price. It created great problems for me, really. Problems I didn't need. And if you ever find yourself, you in the market, as enemy, you better not trade that day. You're not going to have the wherewithal to trade. We have a hard time trading our plan when we feel like we're in a combative environment. It's very hard to do.
we have the left hemisphere of our brain is very logical and fearful and wants things its way and all perfect. This is an imperfect market. So I once had somebody tell me, you do your planning the night before. And I thought this was really good advice. Come up with your potential trades you're going to take. And I'm not talking about the day trading that Dwayne does, which is certainly effective. And I'm not saying that for any reason that I see that it really is. I'm saying that because I was forced to trade over a longer term in my job, and managing big money too forces you to think a little different. You have to plan your way into and out of a trade sometimes, and you don't want to get caught, you know, and not be able to get out. So there's a lot of things there, but my mind and your mind has, you know, we have. Basically, our mind is running three programs. The left hemisphere is the logical belief system and what should be, and how that's the thing we want to use the night before. And we want to put it to bed the next day and go in and execute the plan, which I think is what Dwayne stuff is really good at. I just came upon this a couple of years ago, and I thought, the wisdom that they're given, and I will tell you this, the wisdom that you hear on this program, and, you know, I'm not saying this because Dwayne let me on the program. This is the truth. The deal is, you're getting a really good education without having to pay to get it. And most people that start trading get crushed so bad initially, they can never recover emotionally to trade.
Right there. You just said it. They can't recover. They can't recover emotionally. They could probably recover financially, but the emotional part, and you're right, it is free information and free knowledge, and it's amazing how quickly sometimes people forget that.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the human nature of man. We tend to take things for granted, and we want it served up our way. We want what we want. We want it now. And sometimes it's just ugly. But you know, when you choose to be a public servant, when you choose to be the voice of the E-mini futures, well, it just comes with the territory.
Well, you know, just the fact that you guys are still here this long says something. When I started, I held nothing back about getting help. I hired the best people I could hire that I knew to hire. I sought help from people that were experts that, you know, I couldn't find
anybody to hire. That was my problem. I had some money and I wanted to learn how to trade. And I started asking around, and, you know, at the time, 2005, I mean, I said, not only will I pay you, I'll make the coffee, I'll sharpen your pencils, I want to learn this skill. And aside from the charlatans and snake oil salesmen, there was no legitimate person that I could find, and trust me, I looked, you know, near and far to find somebody. It just wasn't there. And
right.
So I did as many do. I fell in with a guru. He was tall and walked with a swagger and was very charismatic. And so I believed that whatever he said was the gospel, because he sounded like he really knew what he was talking about. And in fact, he is a smart guy. And in fact, I did learn many things over a period of about 3 years. But the main thing I learned was you can't put a square peg in a round hole. The market being the round hole, and Fibonacci as a standalone trading methodology is one great big square peg. Fibonacci is a wonderful analytical tool. You can do projections. You can do very nice stuff. and with a historic chart, because this guru would never trade live in front of anybody because God didn't call him to that ministry. So it's always easy to look like a genius with a historical chart. That's why every time I'm showing historical charts and walking people through trades, what could have been trades, how you could have traded it, I always remind myself to go, hey, this is a historical chart. Because so many people get the wool pulled over their eyes, and it's not just with historical charts. With Camtasia, $300 worth of software, you can create real-time trading videos that, again, make you look like a genius because you're filming it after the fact. You're creating this movie after the market closed for the day. And so, amazingly, you nailed every low, you bought it, you sold every high. Man, who would not want to come and trade with you? Fortunately, once the truth is revealed, that's why you have so many people that are so disillusioned and so disgusted with, I mean, if this were an easy thing, everybody would do it. But, you know, a number I've heard a lot in the world of trading is, how long was it before you really understood what you were doing? 6 years seems to be a pretty common number that I hear. Now, how long were you?
Well,
your approach
32
was
years. I think you never quite get there. And if you think you're there, you're not. I think over time, if you quit your learning curve on this stuff, you're going to lose out. Now, I think a system like yours, it's going to last a lot longer than a normal trading system that was figured out by somebody. Because I think you're working off the internals of the market. And there's reason for it to continue to work. The farther you get out in time, the harder it is to have something that continues to work. I've tried so many things. One fellow I went to his house. I learned the Elliott Wave in the 90s from a super smart guy. And I never could grasp it like he did, and then I saw when it would go off that there was always another rule to apply that explained it. But you don't know those rules till you need them. You don't know they're going to occur. So what I learned with Elliott Wave, I liked it, but it was hard to make money with it, and especially standalone. And then I found another guy who did it in a mechanical way, and I met him at a seminar, and I went over his house. You know, mm-hmm. I paid him a lot of money to teach me the Elliott Wave in a week.
Right.
$5,000 for 4 days. And he taught me the way he did it. He taught me a lot of good stuff. But using a mechanical Elliott Wave with the right parameters to give you the edge is the way to go for me as far as the framework goes. I can't trade off that alone, but when I combine the Fibonacci with it, and mm-hmm. I combine some of my proprietary stuff that I use, I can make money. And I've been doing that for quite a while. I learned the Elliott way. It was probably... I really learned it back in the early 2000s.
Well, you know, I never delved too deeply into it because my initial confusion came from, you know, where do you start the count? That was right there. Once I hit that, now with the Fibonacci, of course, it's, well, where do you start drawing the fibs from? And so
right.
I was told it's either the entire move or the last leg. Okay.
Well, that's pretty much what I like to use. I'll show you some other way that I do when I do the Elliott Wave, because that's where the wave helps me. I give more weight to certain Fibonacci numbers, And you probably know this if you're doing two of them. If you get an overlapping cluster, what might be a 3.82 and a 6.18 from two different measurements.
Yes.
You got a lot of confidence to take a trade there, at least because you can define the risk being small if you want to go one way or the other. So I think it's real helpful in that regard. But there's other things the market tells us. I am working on. I've written a newsletter, weekly newsletter, since 1998. And on vacation last year, you know, my wife and I were out there, and I said, you know, I really don't want to work on the weekends anymore, honey. I just, you know. So I pretty much shut that part of my business down. Paid back the money I was trading and dedicated myself to research here in the last, really, several months. That was, you know, August, I guess, when I did that. Last year, almost been a year. Just to work on ideas that I've had that I really haven't had time to work on. And I'm, this thing isn't anyway close to being done, but it's something I'm just going to throw up here. I'll put the numbers out. I don't really care because I'm learning with this thing. And if you take a look at the S&P, the E-minis here on the far left, the predicted high for the week was 1906.62. The predicted low is 1867.12.
Now, which market is that?
That's the S&P. That's the E-mini.
That's the S&P. Okay.
On the left.
That's the projected high for this week?
This week, yeah. So what we've done this week is the low for the week was, where is it? I think it was 1864.75. So we came down and hit the low. We came down and hit below the low by about two points. And now we've retraced back up. We're not going to get to the high. Normally, if you break the low first, you're not going to make it all the way back to the high, but usually you'll get an attempt at least to get back to the middle of the range, which is sizable. So it looks like the high today was 1897.75. So we're not going to make that. And we're probably not going to make the month, which is the next two down. EP, M is the monthly.
Uh-huh.
1930.50 and 1841.25. I'm running all the statistics on these things, and there's a lot of them, but I think it's pretty fascinating, really, to me, because it's a real tight correlation. Let me put it that way. Some higher than others. Stocks are easier than commodities because we don't have the roll. When you're going on the weekly stuff, you don't have the roll affects the weekly data tremendously when you change to another.
So on Google, you had a projected weekly high of 528. Where are we at in Google today?
552. 552,
okay.
The projected high on Google was, where is that at? Yeah, 528. We're at 552. The projected low was 507. Oh, this is the week. Wow, Google really did something, huh? I don't know what it's done for the week, though. But I will tell you this. Aside from putting a chart up here, which I'm not ready to do, because I'm not sure what I'm going to do with this when I'm done, so I don't want to put too much out just yet. And the year on the S&P, let's just come stay with the S&P here. The month, it's 1930 and 1841 on the S&P for the month. I don't know what we did this month in the S&P. I'm going to go back and check. I should have gotten all this. I wanted to write all this down, Dwayne. That's what I was trying to do before I came.
Oh, that's okay, man. Don't stress yourself out.
Yeah, I just want to make it easy. Let's see, the monthly chart on S&P. 1854.50 was below 1898.50. So, let's see. So 1854.50 was the low for the month, and our low was 1841.25. Sometimes when you have a big move, it tends to consolidate anyway when you have large standard deviation moves, and we didn't make it to the low or the high. But we got next week. It's a long way to go. Maybe David will get his last up that he was alluding to. The quarterly, 1953, the next one down, the Q is the quarterly predictions, 1798 and 1953. We blew that away already, but I still want to look at this. And if I put it on something that you can see, so the quarterly here, our low is 1803. High is 1898, and we were saying, so we missed the low on the quarterly by 5 points because we were at 1803. That's the low for this quarter so far. And we still have another month to go till we end the quarter at the end of June. We got a month and a few days, so we still could get up there. I like these things when they get close to one side before they've been across the midpoint of the range. If they come up high and hit first or low and hit first, I like them. And then there's the annual there. How many lunatics would even attempt to do a yearly prediction? But there it is. 2050 and 1642. I don't know what it looks like. Let's see what we got here.
Now, are we back to the S&P?
Yeah, I'm staying on the S&P. I'm coming right down the thing. So
2050, I mean, that's not that far from here. What is that, 160 points? 150 points?
Yeah. The predicted low for the year was 1732. These predictions were all made on December 31st of 2013. I should say that, the yearly. I'll have tonight at 4:30, I'll have all the weekly numbers for next week, and I'll have the dailies. So I look at that stuff, and it's tradable. Let me put it that way. You've got to have rules. It's going to deviate from the predictions, but that doesn't mean it has a really hard time closing outside of whatever range it come up with. So the numbers prove that. It rarely closes outside of it. It's not... And because of that, it gives you an edge. So this thing is 1642, and what did I say? We were at 1732 on the low. So we're probably, wow, 1730, that's way off, isn't it? Hey, the year's got a long way to go. Let's hope it never gets back down there. But crude oil today, this, I think I'll shut up, Dwayne. You probably need to shut this thing down. There's probably no one left.
Well, oh no, we still got some folks here, but it is time for us to wrap it up for this Friday. And are we gonna do this again next Friday? Or do you want
to
think about it?
I may need to put it off for the next week. I'll let you know. My wife's got some plans, and I just got to see. But we'll talk. Well, I definitely want to come back, Dwayne, and work with you on this stuff.
Okay. What I want to do is I want to figure out how we can take your knowledge, your experience in the business, in the industry, and how the CFRN partners and the community at large can put it to use in their own trading. That's really my goal. You've got a vast knowledge of the industry. You look at all these numbers. They make sense to you. How do we take that, put it in front of our community, in front of our traders, and say, this is something that you can use. This is information other retail traders don't have available.
Right.
Let's work towards that goal.
Right. Yeah, you know, when you're in the business, you have a real edge because you know the physical markets because you're buying and selling in them. And you know when somebody's trying to buy a whole lot of cargo or something. and they try and keep it quiet, but there's nothing quiet in the market. The people that buy and sell in the physical markets do it by word of mouth still. The papers come 1 to 2 weeks later. But we can do a multi-million dollar deal right on the phone right now. You're done. We'll negotiate price. You're done. And that's a really big deal that you just get done. Well, the thing is, if you ever don't perform on a deal, no one in the whole community, and I'm talking about the world right now, because we are the traders, that the buy and sellers know everybody in the physical market. We would get together once a month.
Now, on a deal like
anybody
that,
walked
that
on
you're
a
just...
deal, they were shunned. They were finished. They lost their job. No one ever touched them. No one ever.
In a situation like that, a deal like you were just talking about, okay, that type of deal, does it ever show up anywhere on a chart?
I think it'll show up. I have to think about that. I'm not sure. I don't know how to get that to chart form.
I mean, two guys make an agreement on the phone, but is there an actual trade that transpires down on the exchange floor? How does that, is it an transaction?
Once you commit to a price, if it was a cargo of crude, you'll see the company, if it was a refiner, starting to look at what the margins are. And they'll say, well, if we sold it today, our margin would be $20. We know we'll make money even if we make it, even if it goes down to $14. So why don't we give it a little chance to rally, but if it ever gets down to like $17, we're going to lock it in and they'll come in and sell it. They don't necessarily sell it right away unless it's a ridiculous number on their margin. And then they don't care because they want to lock in a certain percentage of their business at a good profit. And if that's available today, you take part of it. You don't even question it. I mean, that's what the good guys do. So it's not a, if the spreads are fat and somebody does a deal like that, yeah, they're going to go in and sell the products if they're higher than they normally are relative to crude. That's where the crack spreads come in. Those things are real tradable, Dwayne. The margins on them are high, you know, the cracks are high. They're sometimes higher than the outright margins because you know, they can totally just detach from each other if they run out of gasoline in New York Harbor.
And so there's no day trades available in this particular market. These are trades that have to be held overnight, correct?
Right.
Or can we use this information to drive
day trades?
Well,
I don't think, you know, when a guy's trying to do a deal, he doesn't want anybody to know it. So, like, you don't talk your position if you're hunting for something. But the guys talk. The guys that have the oil talk, they're usually net sellers, or the guys that have the products that are trying to sell it, they usually talk. They're friends. They'll call each other. Anybody asking you for this or that or this. But they won't give it out. It's kind of an edge that they have. And it's not really a strong edge, unless somebody's really out there in trouble. And then it becomes that. And if they know somebody, let's say went off the board with thousands of contracts, somebody made an error and they had to cover it. And the market's closed. The market expired. I mean, I had to get helped out on some. I used to trade so much, I had to get helped out in New York Harbor once. Helped out meaning I ended up carrying a position into expiration that I didn't know I had. I had pre-sold gasoline, and we missed it on, you know, we did thousands and thousands of contracts every day of stuff, you know, different things. So I missed it, and I have two assistants that missed it, and so I had to go begging on my knees to get somebody. They were pretty much flush out in New York Harbor, and there's a few guys that hang around there that are always carrying inventory just to help poor little people out who get caught. And let me tell you what, had I covered the position before it went off the board, it would have saved me 9 cents a gallon in gasoline. But as it was, I had to pay 9 cents over the spot price 1 cent in gasoline is $420. So
wow.
To give you an idea, it costs us like $3 a barrel just because we overlooked that one thing.
Hmm.
That's another reason why the FCMs don't let you go into the first notice date or delivery.
Right.
Because if you get delivered on, for whatever reason, the experience that Ed just fell upon is what you'll endure.
Well, we've gone into it and made deliveries in some cases, but I didn't have it. I did not have it to give. And there's always people that will help you out, but I'll tell you, you're sitting there scared because you've got to come up with that stuff or you're in trouble. You've got to do something to remedy the situation. So they let us go all the way up to expiration, Bert, because we were
a hedger.
Hedger.
Right.
Yeah, so we were allowed to, you know, kill ourselves. That was crazy. Anyway,
Well, Ed, it's been great having you on the show. If you can't make it next Friday, that's okay. Just be in touch and let me know if you want to do it the following Friday. I know we have some traders, partners and traders in the larger community that do some trading on some larger scale. They do carry positions overnight. And I think we found a real gem here in the information that you have. I think one thing is you may not be fully aware of how much you do know that other people don't know because you've been walking the path for 30 years. You know, what's obvious to you...
You're assuming the memory holds out.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying what appears obvious to you is Greek to the rest of us. Okay.
Yeah, and I'm sorry about
Bert
that.
And the guy,
sure
it's okay.
How to go into this, but I just wanted to give them a base from a hedging perspective because that's how most of the volume's traded.
Well, when we go, okay, are we done with your chart for now?
Yeah, you bet. Yep.
All right, I'm gonna pull the charts back.
Good. Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm gonna go here. And I'm going to switch this out to crude. Okay. I'm going to put this on a daily. I'm going to put it on an hourly. Okay. So, May 21st, May 22nd, hourly chart. I want to get some volume up here too. Insert. Indicators, volume. This guy, I think for now, we can just get rid of. All right. So, who's buying it? Who is buying and selling this crude, this July contract? Are these the hedgers, the speculators, the retail traders, in this hour, 19,000 contracts were exchanged. In the last hour, 13,000 contracts. Current hour, which is 23 minutes underway, I only got 1,000.
I would say those are the speculators because that's around the release of the weekly inventory report, which is a very important time to be aware of. 9:30 in the morning on Wednesday is the normal time, except on holidays they usually defer it to Thursday. NACGAS has always been
this
on
was,
Thursday.
This big spike right here, where there was 54,000 contracts traded in this hour. I'm assuming that and the big volume, the big price spike as well.
So that's an hourly. That's an hourly thing that came. What time, Wayne?
Yeah, my question is, would that be the hour that that report was released?
Well, is this time based on
this is
Phoenix
11?
Time?
This is right. What you see on my screen is specific time. So
8 o'clock Pacific time.
Yeah, 11 Eastern.
Okay, so the report comes out at 10:30 Eastern.
Okay. So we chop this into, we just break this up into 30 minutes. There we go. And we'll back it up. And there we go. Right? Right.
Yep.
And so it was on this candle here at 11:30 Eastern.
But there are people, there are people that did that report early.
Uh-huh.
Because somebody has to write the report, right?
Well, that's
I'd love to say something here about what used to happen, but I won't on the radio.
Well, I know at the Ag Building where they write the those crop reports, that thing is like shielded in plutonium or something. No incoming phone lines. You can't get radio waves in there. It's really kind of a top secret thing. At least that's the story I was told.
Well, all I know is there were some people that back in my time that would send flowers to the lady typing this thing in when they first started doing it. And
they
think
would
it was,
what?
Huh?
People would do what? Send flowers?
I'll talk to you later about it. I mean, I don't know it firsthand, but I know that that stuff did always occur ahead of time. Just like this, somebody knew something at that point in time.
Right. Well, I mean, right here on the chart, we can clearly see at this point in time, it
was May 21st, Wayne, when it happened.
No, well, I'm just saying that on May 20th, right here, the price of $102.20, buyers, or the bulls, whatever you want to call them, took control of the market. We had a bullish cross right there.
I got you.
And once they took it, ran it up, get a leg, retracement, right back to the BBC, leg and a retracement, a leg and a retracement, a leg, but we don't put in a higher high, which gives us a heads up that things may be about to change. And then right here, they do. Sellers take the ball, and they carry it downfield just a wee bit. And then, again, we're able to identify when the buyers take it back and they run with it. Now, this is on a 30-minute chart. We typically use a four-tick range chart in the live trading room, but I want everybody to see that because this is a 30-minute chart, if you were here getting along this position at a price of 102.20, this thing ran up ultimately a couple of bucks. I mean, you had some pullbacks along the way, but reading that part of the price action, it's not that difficult. I mean, you're going to have little areas here where you're going to have to be quick to move, and you'll get caught on the wrong side. But once price gets back below the step line, you know there's a chance you may be in trouble and you may want to get your stop to break even or better. And then you'll have times like this that you can follow it quite nicely. So these are the kind of things I'd like to get into with you. Bert thought 4-hour charts might be nice. Let's take a peek at those. Let me get rid of the
Wait,
arrows.
I think you got it all figured out with your system. Looks pretty good.
Okay.
You know why your system works, don't you, Dwayne?
Why is that?
Because you don't take a big enough loss to keep you from taking the next trade.
Right. That's here at this cross, sellers take control. Right there. And we can see it. We can see it both after the fact and we can see it in real time. And then we get a pullback, we get a leg and a retracement, back to the BBC, leg, retracement, leg. Here's a deeper retracement, but then we get a reversal, puts it right back in play. And then here, We don't get a lower low. Right here, it's if you're watching it live in real time, when this thing turns up, right here you go, and then clear as day here, buyers take it. Leg, retracement,
they lost
leg,
control
retracement,
right there in the short shirt.
Boom, 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 all the way up to where we are. Now, again, guys, it's easy for anyone to look like a genius using a historical chart. I always have to say that. But you can see this unfold in real time as well as you can see it historically. Okay? But you got to be there. You got to be in front of the screen. You got to be there when it happens to see it happen in real time. Question is do you want to stare at the screens 24 hours a day? Because it's going to happen again. Eventually, the bulls are going to run out of steam. Doesn't mean the bull rally's over, but at some point, there'll be a pullback and an attempt at a leg. It will fail to put in a new high. We'll have a crossover. And then there'll be a leg and a retracement and a leg and a retracement until the buyers step back in to push it up. And so this right here, if we stall out here, this new high we put in was not by very much. And so this could be interesting on the Globex Open Sunday night. So keep an eye on that. Now keep in mind, we're looking at 4-hour chart. With a 4-hour chart, what looks like a couple points or a couple of pennies is it's more than that, okay? So with that, Ed, I'm going to let you go. I know you got a weekend and plans and a holiday, and I thank you for being with us on the show today. Let me look in the chat box real quick, see if there's any final questions. Jeff asks, how about the slingshot on the 30-minute chart? Well, I'll put it back on the 30 again. I'll get rid of arrows. I'll get rid of the volume. And I'll insert the slingshot. Okay. Okay, we get a bullish cross. Price pulls away, price pulls back. Now, on the candle that pulls back and touches the BBC, we come down here, we follow it down. Now, it's this candle here is the one that touches. We come down, we have bullish divergence. All systems are go. You buy the open of the next candle. The open of the next candle is 104.04. There is a drawdown. Let's see what the low of this is. So one more time. We open at 104.04. We draw down to 103.95. So that's a 9-cent drawdown. And then two candles later, an hour later, we've got a swing high at 104.46. So just at first glance, Jeff, I mean, this is everything that we would see on a typical trade in the live trading room on the 4-tick range. Bullish cross, price pulls away, price pulls back, check the divergence. It's good. You just buy the open of the next candle. And then trail your stop. So, and here's another bullish. On this pullback here, we don't have the proper divergence. Let's see. Over here we do. All the ingredients are present here. And this could have actually put you into this entire move. Okay? But again, when you go from a 4-tick range chart to a 30-minute chart, you're going to have to make some adjustments for risk. Okay? So if that's something that you have an interest in, Jeff, or anyone else in the audience, take a look at that. Okay, go through a 30-minute chart. And don't just count them, just don't count it in your head. I mean, actually make a scientific study. Go back with as much data as you can pull in and see how many times there was a trade that you could have realistically taken. All the ingredients were present. How many trades would you have at the end of a week? How many would have been profitable? How many would have been unprofitable? And it's difficult. Those studies are difficult because in a situation such as this, you get this pullback and this one candle, you made a little money, and so you get out. But then you've got these. So you have to ask yourself, when you're doing those studies, those back tests, would I have stayed in this or would I have gotten out? Because that means part would I have gotten out up here. And if you don't know the answer to that question, then you have to go to work on writing your business plan and your trading plan so that you know without question what you're going to do. Because if you do something different every time, you will not have a consistent product. And that's what you want. You want consistency. You don't need to hit it out of the park every day. If you can just get to first base, life's good. Life's good at first base. Just a bunt. That's all I need. Ed, God bless you, brother. Have a great weekend.
God bless you, Jimmy. Thanks.
All right, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Take care. All right, guys, that's going to do it for me. I'm going to wrap it up here. I'm going to call it a weekend. Let's see. George says, the NQ at the moment has challenged the last zone and is now trading above the last zone. It can happen. Let's see where it closes. Let's see if it gets back into and below the zone. We've been publishing the NQs now for four weeks. So we don't have as much time under our belt as we do with the S&P. We've got 4 years. Ed, you still got an open mic there, buddy. So we'll see where this closes. We'll see what it can do. If I'm not mistaken, the Dow, it's at its top zone too, isn't it? No, it's got one more to go. What about the Russell? Russell's still got one more to go. So the only one that's above at the moment, the final zone, is the NQ. And we don't have a lot of time left in the market. So we'll take a look at this on Tuesday when we come back and we'll see how everything closes up for the week. Guys, again, thank you all so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this. There is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a 1-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decisions.